It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, and we have an all-in-studio panel with some of my favorite panelists. Ian Thompson from The Register is here. Brianna Wu is here from Rebellion Pack and from the Vatican. Father Robert Balasair. There's lots of news to talk about, and we're going to get right to it next on Twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 934, recorded Sunday, July 2nd, 2023. The scroll bar is jiggling. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring, you're currently dealing with a slowing economy, which adds to your challenges. Thankfully, there's a hiring partner who's focused on you and your needs. ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by Decisions. Don't let complexity block your company's growth. Decisions, rules-driven process automation software, allows you to manage a complex digital landscape. Build custom workflows, business rules software, modernize legacy systems, and improve customer experiences in Decisions' unified no-code platform. Visit decisions.com/twit to learn how automating anything can change everything. And by ExpressVPN, when your phone carrier tracks you, that's a gross invasion of privacy. You can keep letting them cash in on you, or visit expressvpn.com/twit and get the same VPN I use. Take back your online privacy today. Use my link to get 3 extra months free. And by Collide. Collide is a device trust solution for companies with Okta. They ensure that if a device isn't trusted and secure, it can't log into your cloud apps. Visit collide.com/twit to book an on-demand demo today. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. This week, all in studio. I am so thrilled to get this panel assembled, and I don't know how long this show's going to go, but if I were you, I'd grab lunch and a couple of stiff drinks before you start. Ian Thompson is here. No mustache. I always think of you as the...
Yeah, no, I shaved off the COVID porn stash. It made me look too much like Rob
from the
Jarrett.
Register. Yeah, yeah. Good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Welcome. Thanks for coming up. Also with us, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Massachusetts... Brianna Wu. Hello, good, Brianna.
Good to see you.
In studio.
I just want to say, abolish the monarchy, and America is the best country on earth.
God,
I'm wearing red for a reason.
You'll be back.
Just want to
wait
celebrate
and see.
Our country.
Just
our fine
remember
country.
You belong to me. Brianna's executive director of the Rebellion Pack. Yeah, 4th of July is 2 days from now.
That's right.
And we've got a Brit in here. You could be our whipping boy.
That costs extra, but...
Here to do the whipping, ladies and gentlemen, he's all the way from the Vatican in Rome. Father Robert Balasair is trying to scroll through all his Twitter
to hit the limit
to get to the end.
I want to see the limit here.
There used to be a joke. You'd get to a webpage and say, you've reached the end of the internet. Go back. Mm-hmm. You can actually reach the end of Twitter now.
But again, no one has told me if it counts just the scrolling or do I have to click 600 posts.
So Elon on Saturday said, to address extreme levels of data scraping and system manipulation, he apparently was worried, as is Reddit and many others, that the AI was scraping Twitter data and using it for their large language models. We've applied the following temporary limits. Verified accounts. He shouldn't call them verified accounts. People who pay me $8 are limited to reading 6,000 posts a day. Unverified accounts, everybody else, 600 posts a day. New unverified accounts, 300 posts a day, and if you're not logged in, zero. Almost as soon as he posted this, and this is 10 a.m. on Saturday, Twitter went down.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
users started seeing rate limit exceeded messages. Every topic was about the topic was about the collapse of Twitter, and the Twitter hashtag Twitter down. Thanks, Elon. Here's the trending topics. Thanks, Elon. WTF Twitter. Blue sky.
Yeah.
Damn Twitter. And bankruptcy. Those are the top six trending in the United States at that time. But what's wild, and this came on Mastodon, of course, because you couldn't post on Twitter, but a web developer named Sheldon Chang noticed that as he was trying to load Twitter, the scroll bar was jiggling.
Uh-huh.
What does that mean, Father Robert, when the scroll bar is jiggling like that?
Oh, it basically means that your browser is trying to refresh over and over again to load the content.
Okay. Yeah. He wrote on Mastodon, "This is hilarious. It appears that Twitter is DDoSing itself."
Best kind of DDoS.
Best kind. The Twitter home feed's been down for most of this morning. Even though nothing loads, the Twitter website never stops trying and trying. The reason is Twitter's firing off, he says, and I think he's accurate. I don't think anybody's said that's not true. 10 requests a second to itself to try and fetch content that never arrives because they've blocked people from Twitter without logging in. So I guess this was only if you hadn't logged into Twitter. This likely created, he continues on, some hellish conditions the engineers never envisioned. And so we get this comedy of errors resulting in the most epic of self owns the self DDoS. And then he posts the developer page from his browser. And you can see these are requests. Each of these 20-byte requests saying, give me the data, give me the data. Can you give me the data? Please give me the data. Please give me. Now, if you have a lot of people doing this, Sheldon said, of course, I'm a nice person, so I logged out. Except, wait a minute, Saturday, and evil Sheldon's in charge. So I just stayed there for a little while. Just watching it.
Well, I heard they'd also have some problems paying their cloud bills.
Right.
Well, there was a lot of speculation, right?
Yeah. That, I mean, obviously, this
I thought that was a genius move. That was like the 200 IQ move to not pay your bills because then you get it for free.
Somebody
right?
pointed out works for their office in Market Street. So. But yeah,
somebody pointed out that the contract with Google Cloud expired June 30th.
Yeah, that's right.
Elon had famously stopped paying Google Cloud, except that I saw a story this week that said they made some sort of deal. Google's going to buy some, get some, I think, free ads. And mm-hmm. so that's, and oh, then good. They had moved off of AWS, right? And right. so, I don't know.
Part of this was made worse by the fact that they made some changes since Elon took over to move more of the services onto Twitter servers because right. Elon didn't want to pay any third parties for services that would normally be provided by third parties.
Right.
The issue with that is that when you have an integrated page like the Twitter page, which is calling for 40 different elements at the same time, if you now serve out all 40 of those elements, every time a page loads, you are DDoSing yourself.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, there's unfortunately you could fix that, but there's only two coders left at Twitter, so it's going to take some time.
Well, this is it, you know. It's everyone. We've had this rash of tech layoffs in Silicon Valley of late.
Yeah,
because it's
enabled
like,
by Elon Musk.
Well, no,
to
exactly.
Be fair.
I mean, this
well,
is exactly,
Facebook,
as you
Google,
point. Yeah. But they're just kind of like, well, Elon's
it's
done
almost
it,
a quarter of a million laid off
for the moment. But you know, it's no, exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Although Silicon Valley, I don't know if this is has anything to do with layoffs, but the stock market's been loving Silicon Valley this week. So maybe they said, oh, it's good. You cut your costs and now we want to invest in
And that's part of the problem because we bow to the stock price because that's what props up the value of the company,
exactly.
even
right.
though stock price is not indicative of a company doing something responsible.
Can I point out the one company that didn't lay anybody off? Apple is now a $3 trillion dollar company. Its stock jumped as well.
Yeah. Before we move on, I just wanted to say a thing about the Twitter outage. You know, I was so frustrated with so much of the news coverage about this. I don't know if we have the New York Times article on this on hand. This is, like, I know Ryan Mack is an excellent reporter. He does really good work. But if you read, it's not this one. It's the other one. It's announcing...
Twitter is down in a worldwide outage.
If you go to my Twitter, you can find it. Anyway,
there's quite a few stories from the New York Times about Twitter falling apart.
Sure. This is the
it's
one
hard to find the one you're talking
this
about.
This is the one from yesterday on the 1st.
If I can get on Twitter, I'll get it.
And the problem with this is they're talking about it, and if you look at the first, I think it's the first five paragraphs, they repeatedly go and only cite Elon Musk, giving his pretext for why this is bot scraping. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is not a credible thing. I'm sorry. If like at this point, anyone that works in the tech industry and reports on the tech industry can see a pattern with Elon Musk going back to X.com, where he will talk about a problem that the company is having. He will kind of mislead the public about what the actual problem is and a kind of like obfuscate what is going on here. So this piece, like, go through and look at it. They use Musk as the main source.
But this has been a problem with the New York Times in every area.
100%.
For the last few years.
But this is, so, like...
And the Wall Street Journal and mainstream media.
Wall Street Journal does better than this.
Do they?
But,
okay.
You know, in my estimation, you read this piece, you've got Yul Roth, who is a very credible insider.
Former Twitter Trust and Safety.
Who gave a very credible statement about why this was on Blue Sky. These reporters could have gone over there and looked at this. But they're using Musk and just presenting his face of this whole thing to the public unchallenged.
Well, that's why people listen to Twit. Let's hear this story.
Right.
You know,
because they don't, their purpose is not to write the article. Their purpose is to gain access to Elon. And they know that whoever blows the most smoke up his backside gets access.
But this is the problem with access journalism. This is why we don't do it, is because you will only get the stories that they want to feed you.
Right.
And it's like, it looks great. Yeah, I got an interview with so-and-so. And it's like, but what did he give up for that? You know, I mean...
Well, and I'm proud to say everybody in the tech industry hates me. Apple won't ask me any of their events.
Oh, no.
I've been blacklisted by Apple for 12 years.
Yeah. Taken your tech. Is it theregister.com?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, no.
I just want to see what your coverage is of this.
Oh, well, the Twitter one.
Yeah.
It broke fairly late and half our staff were off for Rebellious Colonial Week.
Okay. So let's just point
pass
out.
Over that for a second. We have this thing called work life balance. It's really hard.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
That's weird.
So you, look, I also get a lot of heat from people who say, you don't give Elon we personally don't give Elon any credit or a break. I was a big Elon fan until fairly recently.
That is not true. Because I remember when he did the first landing of two rockets at the same time.
We broadcast.
You covered the tech.
Yep.
You gave him kudos. You gave him accolades. So it's all about, just because you did something nice in the past doesn't mean that I'm going to gloss over the horrible thing that you're doing now.
Right.
That's what journalists are supposed to do.
Sure.
But I do have to point out, all three of you, you still use Twitter.
To an extent, I use
you guys haven't left Twitter.
I told you.
Hand to God,
I'm on
Mastodon
that thing
more,
like Slim Pickens into
Mastodon,
the ground.
Mastodon, Blue Sky. But
you're going to ride it to the ground.
Ride into the ground.
My problem with this is, I think a decade ago, you could defend a newsroom like the New York Times having a not a deep amount of tech reporting, not really knowing this. In an era where this stuff is shaping elections, I know Ryan Mack is a good reporter. I know he knows the context around Elon. So I think they owe it to their readers. Look, I'm an Elon Musk critic. I will completely own that. Don't just put me in there, but give your readers that alternate point of view.
I'm going to guess that the Times got that article out really, really fast, within minutes of the event, and all they could get was Elon. I'm going to hope, let's look, that they found other sides to that story.
This morning when I looked.
There was nothing, huh?
This morning, but that was like 10 o'clock.
So all we heard from the New York Times was Musk's response.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, that is disappointing. And obviously, there was more to say than that.
The matter is, you can't speculate until you have a definite proof of what's going on.
Sure.
Right. That's true. That Sheldon's post, notwithstanding, we don't know. Is that accurate? We don't know.
We don't know whether it's failure to pay contracts. We don't know if they're trying out new things. We don't know if the software's fallen over. And he's a very litigious bloke. And we have a duty to actually make sure we get it right as well.
And can I say one more thing? I don't think anybody cares about Twitter in the real world.
There is that.
It's us.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I bet you half our audience says, get on, we don't care.
It used to be like that. Tech used to be a safe sector in that you could talk about tech any way you wanted to, and it didn't intersect with the normals. Now it does. Tech is now a political issue. Tech is now an overarching
issue. That's really changed quite a bit.
Although whether Twitter or not will remain that way is very much open for debate.
Twitter could totally go the way of MySpace and GeoCities, 100%. Oh, yeah. But this conversation is going to remain. There's still going to be access journalism. The instant take, the hot take, which is the one that everyone wants because that starts the water cooler conversation, is still going to be there. And big journalists still shouldn't do it, but they're going to be tempted to.
Sure. I just think it's a problem for the industry when you have Casey Newton and the Platformer is consistently going and getting these inside stories of what's going on in Silicon Valley. And you have our big news. Like, I pay for the Times, I pay for Washington Post, and I pay for Wall Street Journal. Because I want to fund newsrooms with the resources to go get the story and to report it out. And it's consistently these smaller blogs that are going and doing the research. And I think that's a real indictment of the big news.
Interestingly, the Platformer doesn't have the story either. They don't have any story because they're probably doing what you suggested, Ian, which is find out what happened. Right?
They had something I saw. I thought I saw it.
Yes, Elon Musk created a spec. No.
I mean, it's interesting in terms of how this develops, but with certain publications, Wall Street Journal springs to mind, there's a very big access journalism element to that.
Always been a problem. And it's always been a problem in the tech sector. Remember automotive journalists. Mm-hmm. It was always hard to trust the big car magazines because you knew that in order to do their job, they had to friends with Ford and 100%. GM and Toyota and everybody. It was always an issue with tech. And one of the reasons I started Twit and one of the reasons I worked at Tech TV is because I wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. Right. I wanted to really kind of, I thought people deserved honest coverage. It's one of the reasons I don't meet with PR people. I don't sign NDAs. It's hurt us in some ways. We don't get access. But it's in the long run, I think it's more important that we speak as honestly as we can about the stories.
I agree totally, which is why I am where I am as well. But I mean, talking about the gaming press, for example, everyone's like, let's really put integrity back into the gaming press. It's like you're assuming it was there in the first place.
No, but to their credit, some of the big gaming sites like Kotaku and Polygon, I think
far too many are willing to accept giving a good review.
Or taking a press release, rewriting it.
This is not just the gaming thing. I mean, remember when Apple Maps came out? And all the people that got advanced access
Apple
to Apple, Apple, when Apple, you know...
And Apple plays that game.
Nobody actually mentioned that Apple Maps was criminally bad software.
We did. That's one of...
Okay, no one... Yes, who was on the...
It's really... Email. Apple knows this. Who gets invited? Who gets to see the Vision Pro? Who gets to try it on?
Yeah.
It's very much, they're very aware of who's going to give them positive coverage and who's not.
Get coverage anymore.
Yeah, we just don't get access.
I do feel like I just want to defend my friends very briefly. Jason Schreier has done amazing labor work in the video game industry. Worked at Kotaku, has talked about the labor abuses. And Rebecca Valentine Polygon has done amazing work on some of the sexual scandals in our industry. But I agree. Overall, these have served as entertainment magazines that hype up the next big thing. And we have
there's an audience for that. To be honest, it's not just the industry. I get email all the time from people who said, you used to have fun in technology. You used to cover the fun stuff and talk about the new things and the fun things. You don't do that anymore. And I think that perhaps we've changed, but I think even the industry has changed. There isn't, like, the newest phones are just incremental.
Yep.
There's nothing to get really excited about.
No one's creating anything anymore. I mean, really, when you think about Apple, Google, a bunch of other tech firms, they've just either bought in technology from other people or they're at the rent-seeking point of the technology cycle for stuff that they've
actually... Well, it's also hard to innovate now because these are mature phones, as an example, are very mature. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's how you feel, then people should celebrate the Vision Pro because that is at least an attempt from Apple to do something new and different. Or,
Meta,
well, not that
Meta
new.
Spent $13.3 billion trying to give us something new, and we resoundingly said no.
Yeah.
So, there are, like the M1 Mac, I think all of us would agree.
Technology.
This was a huge step forward. This made everyone happy. I didn't see any criticism of that across the industry. Generally, we celebrated that. I do think that this is a tech industry that when praise is called for, we will certainly give it. I just think overall, I think as tech has moved from this kind of niche thing to something that's so central in our life and politics, I think it's appropriate for journalists to be more skeptical of these things because it's not toys. This is the fabric of our social contract today.
That is the difference, right? It's not it's not the toy store anymore.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
But I mean, also, we're reaching a point where user growth is slowing down in that people who would be online in the first place are now already online. So you can't rely on that growing user group to keep Wall Street happy. So what do? You start jacking around with prices and
firing
people.
The
same old story goes off.
In some places.
You go to the subscription model for everything.
Yeah.
That's the move right now. Everyone goes to the
subscription model.
Or their own particular app. And, right.
Another arena where a company wanted to make more money, Reddit. Steve Huffman, CEO of Reddit, was one of the founders, wrote the original code
also,
for Reddit.
By the way, just for his PR team, they've got to get a better photo of you than that because he just looks like it's your worst high school photo ever.
Wow. It isn't a great picture, is it?
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Hi.
Hello.
Are you going to eat those tots?
I mean,
he looks like he wants to go play Doom in the dorm in 1992.
Yeah.
I like it.
Gosh, wouldn't be laughing if I had my nunchucks.
I've got skills.
I studied the blade while you were.
So it's kind of this story as old as time. Reddit, which just like Twitter, is a platform which normal people like us put our content on. Normal unpaid people like us moderate, spend many, many hours to moderate. So the real value of Twitter is just like Reddit, is the content that we have put there. But they provide the platform. Huffman, just like Twitter, just like Elon said, hey, we're getting scraped to death by AI. I think AI and large language models have been somewhat of a prod in this because those companies are suddenly getting all the attention based on content they've aggregated from sites like this. I don't hear Jimmy Wales at Wikipedia moaning. I'm sure he was also, you know, a victim of this. In any event, Huffman, who wants to do an IPO, they announced an IPO several years ago. They've been really trying to get the public offering so they can get a big exit. They've never made money, never shown a profit. They were purchased by Condé Nast a few years ago. Condé spun it out as a standalone company, but is still majority shareholder. I imagine Condé also putting pressure. Hey, we'd like to make some money on this.
Yeah, right.
If not through profit, then maybe through an IPO. Huffman now has the burden of, well, it's got to figure out some way to get some money out of this. So he decides, kind of similar to Elon, we're going to charge for the API.
Right.
And I think really what the decision was, very much like Elon, we're going to get rid of these third-party clients that don't show our ads. They are just a cost center to us because they're sucking our bandwidth without giving us any revenue
back. But the only reason they existed was because Reddit's own system was so pathetically bad.
And we interviewed, Jason and Micah interviewed Christian Selig from Apollo, which is really kind of the poster child for all this. He made a great app, an app I use, probably most iOS people use, for Twitter. It was for Reddit. It was a much better app. He had a call early on with Huffman, and Huffman said, yeah, we're going to charge you 24 cents for 1,000 queries. And Steve, Christian did some back of the envelope math and said, well, that's going to cost me $20 million a year based on the amount of usage I have. I cannot charge my users enough to make up for that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and he had a couple of problems. One is I paid for it, but You know, you don't keep paying for it. A lot of people were grandfathered in at lower costs.
Right.
You know, I pay for Twitter, too. Reddit Gold or whatever it's called. I pay for Reddit Premium.
Yeah.
So I want to support them. I want them to do all right. But it sounded like really the plan from Reddit was to kill the third-party clients entirely.
Yeah.
Almost all of them are gone now. June 30th was the end of the line for Apollo, for Reddit is Fun, RIF, for quite a few clients. A few still are around. I don't know how they're doing it. Maybe they raised their prices.
Maybe. I mean, the thing is, these were admin tools which you needed if you're going to be a volunteer moderator.
That's right.
And Reddit's own tools were pathetically bad. Now they've basically said, we're going for IPO, we need all that all that user data ourselves, and we need all those moderator stuff. And the moderators revolted. And I've got to say, I haven't posted, with one exception, anything on the site or submitted anything to the site since this broke out, because they are to accuse volunteer moderators of being landed gentry.
That was a Huffman quote.
Yeah.
Huffman did a publicity tour that was very ham-hatted.
It was very
a lot of bad interviews. Yep. And hurt himself badly. And I think the thing people weren't considering is these moderators who have been unpaid volunteers and worked really, really hard for a very long time. But some moderators shut their subreddit down. The Synology subreddit is now NSFW, which takes away their ad revenue because most advertisers don't want to be on an NSFW subreddit. So moderators are rebelling. A lot of them have left. The people who ran the Ask Me Anythings, the AMAs on Reddit, have all left.
The Formula One subreddit, a bunch of their moderators got involuntary terminated.
So the AMA people left said, if you want to do AMAs, Steve, you should pay the moderators. And they're going. So there's been a rebellion, and now Reddit is kind of clamping down and firing moderators. For a while, Steve was saying, we're going to make it so you can vote out, because he probably is right. There are users of the F1 subreddit, let's say, who want the subreddit to continue, who say, well, you're just getting in our way, moderators. And if there were a vote, get rid of the moderators because we want our subreddit to continue. iPhone subreddit moved off onto Discord. There aren't any credible third party. This is the real problem. There's no credible third party replacement.
Reddit itself only got its start because Dig mucked things
Dig
up
failed.
So badly.
Yeah.
Right.
So there is an opportunity there for someone else to swoop in from the wings.
But is there the problem with Twitter? The problem with Reddit has been the same thing.
They've got to scale too much.
They scaled to the point where they never can never be profitable.
Yeah,
it's not possible for Reddit to ever make money. They took so much investment money that right now either the investors are going to take a bath or Reddit is going to have to clamp down on the very people who are creating the content which they use for advertising.
Right.
That's not possible. They're in a no-win scenario right now. Now, you can say, I understand, businesses have to make money. They have to keep the doors open. I get it. But if you built your model on getting goodwill from the people who are using your service, and that's how you make your money. Yeah. You cannot then turn around and say, well, we still want you to do the stuff that you did when we had the goodwill, but you're not going to get the goodwill anymore.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's well said. And just to add on to that, two things. One, Huffman is very famously emulating Elon Musk in this case. Like, he's come forward, says
I think he admits it, right?
Yeah. Having calls with him.
Total fanboy in those interviews.
Yeah. Like, wanting to come forward, slash costs until it's financially profitable.
Choose your idols, kid. Carefully.
Sure. I'm not going to go down the Elon Musk criticism hole again. I just wanted to say it. But the wider point to me is if you really look into this API funding scheme that they've got, I don't think this is a credible vision for the future, because what they want to do is basically use the Reddit training data for machine language learning, right? Now, there's a whole discussion to be had about bias built into your natural language sets. And
I
for
do
a
not
place
want
like
my AI trained on
trained
Reddit.
Trained on Reddit.
No, but really I do have to point out that a lot of us have been modifying our Google searches with the word Reddit, because almost always it's a better result. In fact,
but
Google's starting to say we're in trouble because without Reddit, our search results aren't
100%.
As good.
Look, I use it for a reason. I'm just saying that there's going to, in my opinion, there's going to come a point very soon where they've gotten the juice for that lemon, right? Mm-hmm. So as far as it being a continuing thing to fund all of Reddit, I think you look at the numbers, it doesn't feel credible.
This makes me sad because Reddit and Twitter both were huge resources, very valuable to the community, both owned by owners who apparently didn't value that and or maybe couldn't afford to keep losing money. I mean, that's I understand how that is. You can only lose so much money.
I think this is maybe why they're so desperate to IPO, because Uber has been doing this stuff for years, but they actually managed to never make money, right? And allowed people to cash out, the initial investors to cash out their stake, and after that they lost interest and you can run it as a loss-making service. But with Reddit, I think you're right. I don't see a way for them to fund this. You know, you can't do that on Reddit Gold purchases. Either you pay for a premium service, or the money gets sold off.
Maybe that's what Elon or Huffman should do, is just say, look, we're a paid service. Get over it. That's the way it's going to be. Sure. You want it to succeed. I'd pay $5 a month.
And 100%.
Would enough people do that?
That would work with a traditional publication. But the problem is both Reddit and Twitter rely on its users to provide the content that it monetizes.
Good point.
You're saying, pay me money and then make my content. That doesn't work.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Do you know what I wonder is also a factor here? That they've engineered these apps, you know, particularly Twitter, to be more and more addictive. They bring scientists on to figure out how to keep you scrolling forever. That has a cost that's associated with it. So maybe, maybe Elon is onto something with this rate-limiting idea, limiting the number of things you can scroll until you have to pay for it. Maybe something like that, like there's a free tier where you can just do it a little bit, but if you're completely addicted to the service like I am,
but the corollary to that is if you submit something, then you should get a discount or a freebie on that.
Fair point. That's interesting. There's a strategy.
You know, because I mean, I've been on Reddit far too long, so I've got 6 digits in karma and comments. You know, if they want my submissions, then they're going to have to pay for them. You know, it's just, I'm a journalist. We don't work for free. It's just like... but I mean, just to annoy that many people who your entire business model depends on, I just don't see the rationale behind it.
So here's a wider question. Yeah, to a certain extent, Twitter and Reddit and services like this are the public commons in 2023, right? Like when I was a teen in the 90s, it was the local coffee shop. We would all go hang out there. Today, it's these digital commons. Mm-hmm. And two, I think there's a question to be asked here. Like, should these be for-profit companies? Because it seems to me there's a public stake. Like, I have no idea how you get the government to fund something like this where it would be good or well-run. But it seems to me that there's a public stake in us having a healthy place
to go. The government's never going to run.
Maybe it's tax credits. Maybe it's just giving them money. I think this is very valuable.
For example, that is run ostensibly as a non-profit so that non-profits can use it.
The problem is you don't know which of these is going to be winners, which of these is going to win the public, right? Reddit just came out of nowhere and took over from Digg. Twitter kind of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Nobody'd ever done anything like it. I mean, what's the next one? No one knows. And I can guarantee you it's not a government-funded or even tax credit-backed or even 501c3 thing.
I was so disappointed when Twitter first came out because I heard it and it's like, this is brilliant. 140 characters. People will craft delicate haikus, fine quality concepts.
That's not what happened.
I had a ham and cheese sandwich on rye.
Blah, blah, blah. Emoji.
Look, all I'm saying here is I'm not arguing for anything. I'm saying that it's the same thing with local newspapers, right? Our democracy and our public commons are weaker with the demise of local news, which, again, this is people have not found a business model that works. And we see our public commons like Reddit and Twitter having the same problem. It just seems to me this is all a common theme that's making our ability to just connect with each other
worse. There is that. I mean, obviously as a child of the BBC, I'm in favor of public service broadcasting.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm not sure that model particularly lines up well. I mean, the Canadians make it work, but other than that, it's...
I think to some degree this is a case of we had these high hopes when the internet began.
Have you read the Hacker Manifesto recently?
Yeah.
It makes you weep with the optimism.
Yeah. We had John Perry Barlow on some years ago reading it out.
I remember it very well, but yeah.
Hackers of the world, or what was it? We are not... Oh, gosh, I can't remember.
So we'd have it...
about race and creed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so much.
So I was part of the group that really had these kind of utopian... dreams for the internet, and it really seemed like it was going to give everybody a voice, and it was going
to
be all these things.
Extent.
I think what we're just seeing is in a natural evolution. I even wondered for decades how this continues without any revenue.
Yeah.
Because it all costs money, right? And it always seemed to me like it wasn't really sustainable.
Yeah.
I'm amazed we got 30 years down the road somehow with nobody making any money. And then, of course, Google figured it out, and then it spread like a virus. Oh, you could put ads on these things and you could make money. And then that's been a nightmare.
Google's type of content is different, though. And you think about the content you find on Reddit or Twitter. It's mostly one-use content.
Yeah.
You will find it once, you will read it once, and then that's it. Think of YouTube. YouTube, you submit that content, it will live forever on the surface, and it can be watched millions and millions of times, over and over, even by the same people.
Yeah.
So when you've got content that is going to be reused over and over, you have a much more solid business plan than you do if it's a one-use post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what John Perry Barlow wrote, gosh, it must be 25 years ago.
Wow.
Governments of the industrial world, you weary giants of flesh and steel, I come from cyberspace, the new home of mind. On behalf of the future, I ask you of the past to leave us alone. You are not welcome among us. You have no sovereignty where we gathered. Actually, that was really wrong. I remember when we had John Perry on to read it, he was embarrassed even then. He said, I don't like to. We have no elected government, nor are we likely to have one.
That didn't pan out.
Yeah. So I address you with no greater authority than that with which liberty itself always speaks. It is really this. I mean, I still cherish this vision of this utopian thing the internet could be, but
he gave us the EFF. That's a hell of a big, you know.
The EFF is where I'm reading this from, by the way. He was one of the founders of the Electronic Frontier.
The downfall of all of this can be summed up with one sentence. Some people suck.
But it's not just that people suck, but it looks like it's free. It isn't.
Right.
It's in fact very expensive. By the way, we're right now burying our heads in the sand with AI, which is horrifically expensive to generate these large language models.
That's right.
And everybody's betting on the come, just like they did with Uber, saying, well, someday it's going to make some money.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
You can't have a pile of whatever this big and there isn't a pony underneath it.
Yeah, there's no pony. I think that's what people are finally finding out.
Yeah.
It's what Elon has found out. It's what Steve Huffman is finding out. And it's very sad, but we had a good run.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's over.
Honestly, I mean, we grew up in the times of print journalism, where if you wanted to start a publication before desktop publishing really kicked off in the 80s and early 90s, you had to have access to a full six-color printer and massive costs and massive distribution costs. The internet, desktop publishing came around, an awful lot easier to produce a magazine. You still got to print it out. Internet lowered the cost of entry dramatically. What's now driving that cost of entry up is a matter of scale and deliberate policy. So it's gone sour somewhere along the line.
Well, and that's what's happened to Twit. And so people who are talking about, you used to be all fun and all the cool things. It was, but now reality, I sad to say, has sunk in for this internet generation. And I don't care where you look, you're seeing people saying, we need to make money at this. We can't keep doing this for free.
You know, we're the technorati, and one of the things that we never say is, it's okay for these things to die.
They have to.
Yeah.
They're going to die. They have to die because something else will come along. As long as we keep holding on to, we're going to prop it up, we're going to keep investing, we're going to find a new revenues, then it will stagnate because all they're focusing on now is, I need to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
Do you think so? Like, I was looking at something the other day, just talking about the state of media, right? Mm-hmm. And there was such a change in that industry when it went from print to digital media that disrupted everything. You were very much on that forefront of it. Now that everyone is having so much trouble, that's exactly it. We're seeing digital go, like, it's becoming smaller, and there's nothing to replace it with.
Right.
Like, there's just less of it.
Who would build another Reddit or another Twitter these days?
Someone look over at the streaming space for Gen Z. So you have a competitor to Twitch. Twitch is in a lot of financial problems, despite being owned by Amazon. And you have Kick. Kick has started passing out $100 million contracts like they're candy.
That is not sustainable. They just paid Ninja $100 million.
That's Microsoft paying Ninja for Mixer and then shutting it down 6 months later.
Yeah. And but so now
get me started on Nokia,
$100 million, not even an exclusive.
That's right.
Mm. So that's not sustainable.
Well,
so,
no.
To be fair, the thing with Kick is it's tied into gambling. So it's
there's a
huge
lot of
gambling.
Money floating around.
There's a lot of incentive there to kind of plug the user base into online gambling. So that's where they make their money, which is probably a better business model than, say, Twitch.
Well, and so that's what happens. It's right. Either gambling
yep.
or Google spying on us all and selling advertising or Meta doing the same. It's
yeah, or porn.
Well, none of these porn, you know what I mean? It's,
or porn. That goes without saying.
But well, porn's in trouble too because of the digital environment. Nobody pays for porn anymore, right?
Yeah.
So
you know, Leo, some people still care about production value.
It's all about story, isn't it?
You know,
no,
keep,
I think honestly,
good soundtrack.
Look at the streamers like Netflix, Amazon Prime. Everybody is suffering.
Mm.
And it's not because the economy's going south anymore. You can't say that anymore.
No, it's oversupply. It's bad management decisions by some companies.
I think it's because it was always unsustainable. Yeah. Clearly, Kick, you can't pay people $100 million
except,
for non-exclusive
well, no,
deals.
But I mean, what is that $100 million for? That yeah. is not a contract with a person. That is an enticement for people to invest in Kick. That is an announcement
to
say.
I don't agree.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, when you pay out these big deals and you know that you're never going to get an ROI on that deal,
sure.
It means that you want to move yourself up in the headlines.
Sure.
It means you want to make your business model.
This is unsustainable. This is a model
absolutely
we've seen. This why Uber. It's why.
But
it's,
in the short term,
it's you know users at any expense. And we'll figure out how to monetize later. But I think we know now. There is no later.
But if they can make their IPO and get up X billion dollars.
How many suckers can you find?
Twitter was a success story. The investors got paid.
Yeah. I feel honor bound to defend Trainwreck, who is one of the people behind Kick. I mean, this is someone who, if you listen to him talk about the business model for Kick, he talks about the lifetime user value of bringing someone over there and getting them on the what they call the Gamba train. Can't call it gambling. Got to be Gen
yeah,
Z. Call
course,
it the Gamba.
Of course.
You know, and this is something that Twitch.
Great.
Is
so
really
he's going to addict a whole new generation.
I'm saying
to
it's
gambling,
a revenue
and
model.
That's,
I'm saying it's a revenue.
You got to find a sucker somewhere. If it's not the stock market, it's gamblers.
I do like the readers just to podcast only fathers.
There's no sustainable business without screwing somebody.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you used to be.
I mean, the only reason Twitter investors got their money out is because some idiot paid $44 billion for it.
Yeah, exactly.
All successful businesses are built on vice. Every single one.
Says the priest.
No, and
about,
it says the priest.
What about...
You know, probably better than most.
No, I'm dead serious. Even nonprofits, you know how we raise money?
It's all based
we
on
appeal
greed,
to ego.
Pride.
We appeal to legacy.
Lust.
What about Legos? How are Legos built on vice?
Legos are built on this idea of idealizing childhood, the simplicity of building something,
and the greed
hands.
Of children.
That's very
I gotta
disrespectful
have more Lego.
To Woolando. My $20,000.
No, no. I'm not saying that.
City.
Oh my gosh!
I gotta have more Lego.
Get rid of it.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, you have to understand that every successful business, in some way or form, appeals to a vice.
Sure. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Let me just look. The seven deadly sins. I have to do a little refresher.
Oh, we should do the seven deadly sins and then group the companies in those Zen diagrams.
Gluttony, lust, greed, despair. I don't think anybody's making money on despair, but we'll have to research.
OnlyFans.
We were watching Sandman, and I think Netflix is making quite
anger,
a lot of money.
Anger, wrath, so. Twitter.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Sloth.
Yeah. Video games.
Podcast. Yeah.
No. Sloth is DoorDash.
DoorDash.
Yeah.
Fair.
Pride. Who's making money on Pride? Lego.
Lego?
No.
I'm actually proud of myself.
No,
city.
Twitter is also Pride.
Yeah.
Twitter is Pride.
People want to post. They want to get those likes, those followers.
Nobody actually goes on Facebook and says, oh, God, really bad PMS today. My head is killing me. It's all like, had a lovely day today with the family. Here's some artfully taken shots.
I just woke up. My hair is perfect and my skin is flawless.
That's Instagram, I think.
Lust, that is sloth, wrath. I think we got them all. Envy. Who's based on envy?
Insta.
No. About envy. FOMO. What's the one with for Zillow?
Zillow
is envy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Use Zillow to actually get a house. So.
Well, there's really? Some people use it for real, but
Brianna,
most people use it for
You may actually be one of the virtuous people, which means you need to get out of here.
We think of virtue, think of Brianna Williams.
Isn't that interesting? I think you've got a new... We're going to call it the Balassare Theorem.
I'm so going to do this.
All
I'm going to make a big poster.
Companies are based... On one of the seven deadly sins.
You should come up with some elements so when you talk about Twitter, this deadly sin comes up.
Are there any venial sins that I can do that maybe...
Every great fortune is based on a crime?
Yeah.
I'm damned if I can remember.
Probably someone British.
Hang on.
I mean, the monarchy, to get Brianna back in on this.
Behind every great fortune...
is a flag.
There is a crime. Balzac.
Oh, okay. Yeah, don't blame the Brits for this one. He's a French bloke.
It was a good guess.
It's a French bloke with a very dodgy-sounding name.
I didn't know this, but it was the epigraph of The Godfather. It was the epigraph of The Godfather.
It
was inspired by a sentence written by Balzac. Le secret de grande fortune sans cause apparente est un crime oublié. The secret of grand fortunes without obvious cause is a forgotten crime.
See, it just sounds better in French.
Yeah. Some languages are better at that. Really, you know, this is the reason there's been no German love poets, you know, just... or Finnish sonnets.
All right, we're going to hear from the German love poets in the next segment of this show. Actually, I have a gift for Father Robert in the next section of the show.
Uh-oh.
All right, it's so fun to have an all-in studio. It's just so much more lively.
It's been a year.
We're all going to dinner after this.
Yes, we are.
So save some conversation for dinner. Brianna Wu is here all the way from the East Coast. What brings you out here?
I am guest of honor at BayCon.
Hey! Fun! Nice.
Yes.
Is that the conference for people who are big fans of...
Science fiction. Yep. Kat Valente, who's one of my favorite authors, she's out there headlining it along with me. Along with this guy... I'm sort of a fan of Frank Wu.
He's not only a writer, but he's a great illustrator. Yep. I saw his stuff at the Science Fiction Museum, the Museum of Popular something or other in Seattle.
Are you letting Frank drive?
No.
I wanted to say, can he drive a manual?
No.
Look,
I'm in a
Prius.
He's
even on the front page.
I took that picture.
Thank you. That's a great picture of Frank. Look at that with the American Eagle.
Right behind him. We call him Eagley. We got that and put it in our front yard because we love America.
I think you only take photos of Frank when he's doing that surprised face. Every photo is like Frank.
He loves to perform. He's like you, Leo. He's on and he just has that
Frank's
je
the
ne sais quoi.
He's got jazz hands.
There we go.
Also with us, it's so great to have Ian Thompson.
I understand.
Who's the guy with the thin mustache that I always think you look like, or used to look like when you had the mustache?
Dudley Do-Right?
No. The famous British with that
Paul Rowe?
With the gap in his teeth.
Oh, Terry Thomas?
Terry Thomas. That's why I keep calling you Ian Thomas.
I have been assumed.
Yes.
It has been pointed out to me that when I get very, very drunk, I do become a
depraved
Terry Thomas.
You remind me a lot of Terry Thomas. And I thought that's who you were for a long time. So
wait, was he a master in Doctor Who?
No, he's long gone. But what a great British actor. And when you had the pencil mustache...
Oh, the 13th Duke of Wimbledon was my favorite. Was by far the best costume I had put on.
Is that a real duke or just someone you met?
No, this is a guy from the Fast Show called the 13th Duke. Me, the 13th Duke of Wimbledon, here in the ladies' finishing school with my reputation. Ding dong. You know what I mean?
Thank you, sir. Ian normally writes for the Register, but he also does impressions.
Well,
and
normally,
if you want to invite him to your next party, I'm sure he'll become as the 13th Duke of Wimbledon.
You need a top hat and a monocle.
Please.
I have both in the other room. We'll get him.
And a brandy sifter.
We don't have a snifter. Father Robert Balassare, all the way from Vatican City. It's so good to see you. You are here for fun or profit?
No, I am here. I made a deal with my boss to come home four times a year to take care of my father. And take some of the pressure off my mom and my sister.
That's
good
lovely.
For you.
I'm so glad you are here.
It's nice to be
home. Love seeing you. Yeah. I missed you in Rome.
By 3 hours, I think.
Yeah, I could have come to that party, but we were flying out early the next morning, and I thought, you know.
I told you, I had so many special. I was going to take you down into the Necropolis. I was going to take you into the back of the Vatican.
Oh, man, you've gotten wicked pictures.
And remember, I told you, if you get a call from me, it's because we have another one of those after-hour tours.
And
of the
I will
Vatican
be on
museums.
A plane that night. That's, if you call, I will be
nobody there. But us. They just let us run. Oh, that's so much fun.
I really enjoyed Rome. And it's funny because you do not appreciate it at all.
I don't. I feel bad about
it's
that.
It's the greatest city in the world, and he doesn't appreciate it.
I mean, it's...
What?
I could see why some people would like it, but
when you've lived in Las Vegas, Rome, it feels like
good God.
I look at the Colosseum and I go, you know, I could fix that.
All right, we're gonna have more in just a bit with what a wonderful panel. But first, a word from our sponsor, Zip Recruiter. We use Zip Recruiter, and if you're hiring, and you're currently dealing with a interesting economic future. That's adding to your challenge, isn't it? Now more than ever, it's important to hire the right people faster and more efficiently to keep overall costs down. Fortunately, there's a hiring partner who's focused on you and your needs. ZipRecruiter. From pricing to technology, everything ZipRecruiter does is for you and what works best for you. Right now, you could try them free. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. How does ZipRecruiter prioritize your needs? Well, got to start with price. Very straightforward pricing. You know what you pay before posting your job, so you can stick to your budget. There's no surprises. Plus, you will reach more qualified people because ZipRecruiter casts the widest possible net, sending your job posting to more than 100 job sites. One click of the mouse. Find great candidates faster with their smart technology. Invite the best matches to apply for your job and beat out the competition for talent because ZipRecruiter does something really remarkable. They will find and then let you invite candidates you really want to apply to your job before the other guys can snag them. Hire the best with the help of a partner who's all about you. We've used them for years. Some of our best employees come from ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. For us, usually within the first hour. It's quite impressive. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter free. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thank you, ZipRecruiter, for supporting This Week in Tech. Father Robert, I thought you were here for DEF CON or Black
Hat. That is in August. In August, I am going to DEF CON.
So you want to come to Summer Camp?
I have my ticket. I'm ready to go. Yep.
Excellent. I will see
you
there. I
haven't been there for 3 years.
Oh, you go every year too, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
The last time Ian and I were together at DEF CON, he was sitting in front of me and I just started...
You sneak-shotted me.
Just taking pictures of him and putting it on Twitter.
Well, now I want you to take this to DEF CON with you. This is,
no.
And by the way, this is a huge success. It's the Flipper Zero. Amazon refuses to sell it because it's, they call it a multi-tool for hackers.
It is a multi-tool.
It's not really
a security device. I mean, come on.
It's not that dangerous.
If you have no idea what you're doing, it will not make you an elite hacker.
And if you know what you're doing, you can buy stuff that will do everything on here. Plus, but it's just kind of cool. And it has a little snake game on it, so you can pretend when you're going through Italian customs, that's just my little snake game.
You know you
what
can buy a Nokia for like $3 now.
$80 million worth of sales on the Flipper Zero. It's so funny, I'm teasing him.
It's a Flipper.
I'm teasing him. I have updated the firmware, but I think you might have to do it again because it's been a while. That's the Flipper Zero.
Dear DEF CON, I'm coming.
Now, just so you know, if that's a sin, you could just give that to me and save your eternal
soul. This is going to be emblazoned with a Twit sticker so everyone knows that they're being hacked by Twit.
Oh, please. Yeah. No. It's supposed to be a plausible deniability. So it's I did a little review of it. In fact, I used it to break into the studio. I cloned Micah's fob, and it does it. It's very easy. It's very transparent.
Okay.
You can open garage doors. In theory, and I was going to do this, and I was warned against it. In theory, you could break into cars by duplicating the key fob on that little device. The problem is modern cars will sense it and lock you out.
Ooh.
And then it would have to get all new key fobs.
I have a way around that.
which is...
See, that's why it's in better hands.
Do you ever worry that if there's an actual hacker that gets into the Vatican, like, they're all going to blame you. They're going to be like, it's
Robert. No. That has happened.
Oh, really?
And they call me.
Really?
Oh.
Oh, okay. So they assume...
He set up a honeypot. You were in all the newspapers a few years ago when you set up a Minecraft server, the Vatican's Minecraft server. But it turns out it was really more like a honeypot.
It was a honeypot.
But it worked so well.
You caught all the bad guys.
It worked so well.
All the bad guys.
My sister just bought a Tesla. So, hey, Mel.
Uh-oh. This thing, what it really is a little inexpensive, relatively. Yeah. I think it was $130.
I'm the captain.
Device that has a bunch of radio. In it, right? Mm-hmm. And firmware that lets you access those radios and do
stuff.
They're
all software-defined radios, so you can make them do anything you want them to do. Wow. We've had setups like this for years and years, but it normally meant you had to have several different radio setups connected to your laptop and run specialized software. This is sort of hit the button and leave it in your pocket and see what comes up.
You could open your sister's charging port with it. Just press a button and it goes pop.
Well, I mean, also, frankly, you could stick it in the bushes in front of a house and collect all kinds of useful stuff. I was at a DEF CON. In fact, the last DEF CON I went to, there was a very interesting talk where they looked at Bluetooth locks. And there, they looked at, I think it was a dozen locks, and they found that 10 out of the 12 were broadcasting the codes in clear text.
Oh, yeah.
And you just throw one of those into the bridge, into the hedge, and it would pick it up. And of the other two, one of them, which did encrypt its data, was so easy to open you could do it with a screwdriver.
If you go to St. Peter's and you're walking around the square, you will probably get a signal that says free Vatican Wi-Fi.
Oh!
That's me.
Oh!
You have any idea how much information I've collected? Because I've got a Yagi on top of our roof pointing down into the square. No. And I'm thinking, who thinks that there's free Wi-Fi?
No. Oh, my goodness. Maybe it's the church being nice.
I know.
What's wrong with that?
Say that statement three times slowly.
I might have joined that, come to think of it. I'm trying to remember.
I mean, most of the traffic is encrypted, but you'd be surprised how much stuff goes in clear text. It's amazing. In this day and age, there's still clear text.
So show me, here's a picture of the Vatican City. I took this
Go back to that.
We weren't sure where you lived. Right there? Is that your studio?
That statue?
Yeah.
That's my studio.
That's your studio right there?
You're complaining about this?
Look at this. He's overlooking... See all these chairs? That's when the Pope does an audience. That's where all the people sit. He's right there.
Yeah, no, I just go up to the roof.
Okay, I understand that tourists drive up prices, but that's still a pretty sweet crib.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's very nice. It's beautiful. It's. I mean, I can't complain about that.
So jealous.
But the city itself, I mean, I don't dislike it. It's just I don't appreciate it. I know I don't appreciate it. I'm self-aware enough to know I'm in the middle of something that's beautiful, and I have no idea what
I'm looking at. Here's another view from St. Peter's Basilica, the church. And there's your little hut right there on top.
Yep. Yeah, just look for those trees. Those trees, that's our property. All of that is our property.
We call them lollipop trees, but there's actually another name
like
for
cypress.
Them.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. So I assume you saw Fast 10. Did they get that accurate with the Vatican? They didn't.
Any car chase through any part of Rome
doesn't go
is
the
fictional.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
can't. You can't.
That's right. But your wheels would fall off.
I did a test drive for the 2015 Mustang.
Oh, yeah.
And figured, okay, I'm in San Francisco, let's do the bullet ride. And it's like, you can't actually do that.
You could, but you drive that bit there, then you would ruin the car.
2 miles over to the city and the rest of it.
Yeah.
By the way, if any of you visit Rome, you can stay with us. We do have guest apartments.
But I can't get on the Wi-Fi because I'll get out.
Don't get whatever you do.
It's true. Don't do that. Yeah.
So this is St. Peter's, and you're just right over here. You're right
on the
edge.
No, on the other side. I'm on that side.
That side.
There we go.
Leah, what did you take that with? That's gorgeous.
That's very nice.
iPhone 14.
No way.
I didn't bring a real camera.
Wow.
Because I wanted to do a test. Like, can I take all the pictures that I want to take?
Should I give the audience a tip?
Did you?
That will probably... Or just keep it for everyone else.
Yeah, give them a tip.
So, the tip is this. If you are going to visit Rome, the best tour to take is the Scavi, S-C-A-V-I.
Oh, I didn't know this.
It's only been recently opened. So it is the excavation underneath St. Peter's. It's the necropolis.
Ooh, wow.
Okay.
Now, the nice thing about it is it's relatively inexpensive. It's only like 13 euros for a ticket. They only take 120 people a day. So of the tens of thousands of people that go through, they only take 120.
Oh, wow. So it's hard to get into.
It's hard. Well, no, you just have to, nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
So you have to reserve it well in advance. But the nice thing is, after you're done with the tour, it pops you up in St. Peter. So you bypass all those lines, the hours and hours of lines you don't have to deal with.
Oh, there are lines. And by the way, you have to surrender tripods. You have to surrender a lot of stuff.
Unless
you know somebody.
Ufficio Scavi, Fabrica di San Pietro.
I'm trying to remember the catacombs under Paris. We went down there.
Correct.
I would love.
That was quite something.
To do this. Oh, my gosh. I wish I'd known.
I just recently found out that one of the tunnels on our property actually connects, is adjacent to the tunnels there.
Wow.
So I just knocked through the wall a little bit and.
Yeah. I don't know why. This is not a picture of the Pope.
This is off topic.
This is my Diablo 4 character. One ugly brute?
That's Francis.
I think you could have done better.
That's an ugly brute.
I like the hat. You should get the hat.
Are you in the studio? Like deep into that game now?
Yeah.
It's
I'm not
so
that far
dark.
Along. But
it is so it's
very
occulty.
Yeah.
Is it as good as people say it is?
It's Diablo. If you play Diablo 3, it's just like it.
Yeah, I played like 15 minutes and got tired of dying.
I got tired of just mash, because it really is a slot machine, I realize. We were talking a couple of weeks ago with Ashley Esquetha on the show. She's like World 3. She's a top tier 60,
oh my
whatever.
Goodness.
She played a lot of it. And I said, it's just a slot machine. You keep pushing the button until you get loot, and then you go somewhere else and you push the button a bunch until you get loot.
Yeah.
Right?
I think
that's
it's
the mechanics
about,
of it. There's
it's
not a lot of strategy.
About, no. I completely disagree with that. It's about optimizing your build at the highest levels for really high level content and then farming certain rare elements.
By getting loot.
Yeah. But it's the fun is all in how you do your build. That game is so dark. Like, I love horror movies.
It's grimmer than it's ever been before.
All the other Diablos are just cartoons. Mm-hmm. Like, this is seriously unsettling.
Horror movie type.
It really is. Wow. It really is.
See, I'm not big on that.
Well, don't play this game. Yeah. You're not going to like it.
Is it grimmer than Elden Ring?
Yeah, sort of.
Is it more grindy than Lost Souls or Dark Souls?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, it's just that's all it is. Yeah. That's what Diablo is.
It's just grinding. Right. Yeah. See, I'm not a fan of like.
It's fun grinding though because it's so grim.
Ooh.
I have to say, there's a lot more story. They have used their time and probably AI to generate a lot of backstory, a lot of NPCs, a lot of stuff going on. In fact, I realized, don't talk to anybody. They're going to give you a job. And pretty soon you got all these quests. If you talk to anybody, you know, my father died on the plains 100 years ago, and we're still trying to get the keys to the house.
Wait, are all the quests procedurally generated?
No,
I think they're scripted, but they're also depressing because you show up and it's like, oh, your father died in a ritual suicide. Watch him just kill himself right in front of you.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible. Yeah, it's pretty horrible.
I mean, that's pretty normal. That happens. That's
speaking of horrible, it looks like Canada is going to pass C-18.
Boo.
Nah, boy,
and already Meta has said, well, if C-18 passes, which is a link tax, basically. This is the one where they did it in Australia.
Back down like they did in Australia.
So this came out of Rupert Murdoch, who said, you know, hey, mate, you're linking to my content. You ought to give me some money for that. To which Google says, we're driving all the traffic to your content, and you want us to pay you? Anyway, legislatures being legislatures get involved. And in the case of Canada, it's now a law. The government says Google and other companies will have to pay for showing links to news sites.
Blame Canada.
Meta has already said, no more news for you, Canada, in any of our feeds. And Google has just announced that they are, in fact, going to remove links to Canadian news. Now, see, how is this good for your... If you're, you know, the Toronto Globe and Mail, they're going to remove links in search, news, and Discover products. You'll no longer be able to operate the Google News Showcase in Canada, so that's gone. Google's basically said bye-bye.
Yeah.
Okay, so someone on the coalface for this, it's not as bad as it sounds. It all depends on your readership model. So, for example...
So you get traffic that's not referred from the search engines.
We get about less than double-digit traffic from Facebook. We get less than a third of our traffic from Google. We get a bunch of direct people because they love the site. They come directly to us. Now, yeah, if you're running...
I can't tell you how...
If you're running
how
a
few times I've
site,
seen register.com.
Oh, yeah. Try and find us on TechMeme. We're rarer than a virgin in Manchester. But, you know, I mean, it's just like...
I don't know anything about Manchester, but I'm guessing that's fairly rare. But I know, like I said, I went to the front page today because we were looking for Twitter stories.
Yeah.
But normally I just see links or that I follow. And you're right. Yeah. You're not on TechMeme. You would be referred a lot by TechMeme if.
Yeah. No, I mean, for some reason they've got something to believe with us. But I mean, it's like, it depends how you build,
but that hurts
build
you.
The model around.
That
it.
Hurts you if Google search doesn't show you, if Meta doesn't show you, if TechMeme doesn't show you.
Honestly, if we actually got revenue from then taking our copy and publishing it, which it's kind of reasonable enough, then, you know, we wouldn't have a problem with it. As it is, we survive as we do.
That's kind of what happened in Australia, which is Murdoch's publications and all the others got together with Google and negotiated a fee.
Yeah. So exactly the same thing will happen in Canada.
Okay.
Well, I mean, they tried it in Spain. Remember Spain? That was running for 8 years, and the Spanish publishers were saying, no, you owe us money. They actually levied a mandated payment, and then Google said, okay, we're going to stop. Yeah. We're shutting down Google Spain.
Yeah.
And they did for 2 years, and then finally they came back. Spain changed the law, no mandatory payments, and because they realized they're actually providing us a service. Same thing's going to happen in Canada. There's going to be some publishers who are going to stick to their guns because they are insistent that they were right, and the other publishers are going to look at the bottom line and say, wait a minute, is this really what we wanted?
I think there's a difference in terms of market, because Australia and Canada are much bigger markets than Spain will ever be. There is a very limited market for Spanish language news. Well, for European Spanish language news, let's put it that way. Whereas Canada, Australia, they've got a bit more clout. It all depends whether or not they hang together or hang separately.
So, I mean, look, I truly don't have strong policy positions on this, but just to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here, you know, the reality is Google is one of the largest companies in the entire world, and they have built a revenue model that is about value extraction from a lot of different parts of the industry. I can tell you, as someone who runs a ton of ads and will run literally hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million in ads for 2024, you know, we give them and Facebook a lot of money because their ad tools are the very best in the business.
Yep.
They've built essentially a monopoly or a duopoly, I think would be fair to say, that makes it very hard for smaller people in this space to thrive. So don't you think maybe this is not the answer? But, you know, Leo, coming back to the hackers-like motto that you were putting up earlier, if you look at what went wrong with that vision, it was the big companies like Google and Facebook kind of interceding.
Extracting all the value possible out of the internet.
And balkanizing, certain parts of the... I know you shouldn't say that word today, but you know what I mean. Like segmenting off the internet and
why can't you say balkanizing? That's historic.
It's supposed to be offensive in some way.
To people
in the
Balkans?
Apparently, okay. I don't want to get into it.
I apologize to our friend. In the Balkans.
Oh, I thought you said vulcanizing, like treating
very offensive, very offensive.
So this is I just searched for the headline of your article about Google, which we're going to get to. True,
Brian. Yeah,
and I find the link to the register. Mm-hmm. I see a snippet. The snippet is not long. It's not even it's not even three sentences. It's 2.5. Google accused of ripping off advertisers with video ads no one saw. Now the expert view. That's it. Yep. And if I want to read more, I'm going to click that link. I don't think they're stealing anything from you with that snippet.
No, but they are taking advantage of content that they had no input into.
Right.
How are they taking advantage? They're giving me, searching for this story, a little bit so I know what that article's going to be.
And we're giving them a reason for them to look at your site.
Yeah, but I'm going to click your link. I mean, the only reason this would be costly to you as if I read the snippet and then said, oh, that's plenty, and didn't go to your site. Hmm. But this doesn't give me enough to do that.
They have improved a lot on that. But at the same time, you know, it's... Well, look, we're not...
They are driving traffic to you.
Within a limited format, yes. And they're also benefiting enormously from that traffic themselves.
Well, their service is a search
of their own heart.
They're doing a search engine, and
collects data on the people that do the searches, which pays for Google's bills.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like you can't build, as you put it, the best advertising engine in the world unless you've got a hell of a lot of user data.
That's exactly right.
And they get that user data from register readers, from people that go through their site to the register.
It is so specific that I use that information with list matching to like find out what articles they've read, what they're interested in. Like right. It is truly, when you dig down into it, it's
disturbing.
So look, I truly don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. I just think at some point we're going to have to reckon with a tech industry that is built in a way that about three or four companies can really succeed and everyone else is fighting for their life. It seems to me this is having...
It's the American way.
Do you think Bing should pay you for a link to the register?
Bing a kind of, you know, that's kind of like... Really,
but they're doing the same thing. They're just not doing it as well.
Yeah, no, that's it. They're not doing it as well.
But I mean, we need search engines, right? Or the internet is pretty much unusable.
Well, I've got to say, Google's pretty much unusable over the last.
Google has become a worse and worse search engine.
Well, I mean, that's why I only use Bing.
Or DuckDuck. Let's say you use DuckDuck.
I'm not even joking about that.
I like Bing.
I don't know if Bing is. Well, I don't know. Let's see.
I just like dividing my information among different giants. Yeah.
I like AI part of Bing is really, really impressive. Yes. I really enjoy.
Same with
Well,
Bard,
this is funny. You know what I mean? That's because Bing is actually taking your article and putting it under bing.com/news. I presume they pay you for that or no?
News to me if they do.
Yeah. Okay. The analytics report contends Google's truth. They give their snippet has a lot more information.
Yeah.
Gives advertisers less value because contrary to the chocolate, they even got the chocolate factory.
I mean, I guess we could sue Microsoft, but that tends to have a fairly short half-life for the company's survival.
I'm sure Google is an equal amount of clout.
It's the search engine that goes Bing.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody likes to diss Bing. I mean, it has grown into a pretty...
It's not bad.
It's not a rounding error
that.
What I'm saying as far as being a profitable company.
Like, I mean, right? I've got 190,000 Bing points.
Oh, good for you.
I have no idea what I can do with them.
Do you get the Bing t-shirt at some point?
No, I think I could get like a $5 gift certificate to Olive Garden.
The breadsticks are not free, though, for people using the certificates, just so you know.
That's true.
I tried an Olive Garden once, never again. That and White Castle.
It's not that bad.
No, Olive Garden, Taco Bell, and White Castle are three things that should never
be. We got a reservation tonight for the Olive Garden. I thought we would
I may have taken an Olive Garden sign back to Rome.
What? Really?
And I put it in the cafe on the ground floor. And they had no idea what it was, but I was like waiting for tourists to go by and go,
tourists would go, what? There's an Olive Garden in Rome? Wow, that's so great.
Hey, when you eat there, you're family.
Well, I do love, though, in Vienna, when McDonald's opened their first McDonald's in the old town, for the one and only time ever, they had to stop the double arches because they put it on a main tourist street where the buildings are so locked down in design. There's just a tiny little McDonald's in one corner.
The McDonald's in Rome, there are quite a few in Rome, but the one near the Spanish Steps is actually pretty cool. It's really nice.
Really?
Yes, because they had to make it fit in to
the local architecture.
The local architecture on all that.
Have you got a pick?
Let's see. The Piazza di Spagna.
They sell beer at McDonald's in Italy.
Yeah, they do. They sell beer at everywhere in Italy.
Kind of looks like a McDonald's.
It still looks like a McDonald's, doesn't it? Yeah. I like the outdoor seating, though. That's kind of nice.
The nuggets are actually better in Italy than they are in the United States. And I don't know what it is.
Who would go to Italy and have a McCafe?
The coffee in McDonald's is terrible. Even here, it's terrible. But especially in Rome, don't do it.
Did Domino's actually try and set up franchises in Italy?
They did.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
There's hubris for you.
Termini Station, there is a pizza-making robot. It makes horrible pizza. The only reason why people use it is because they like to see it.
Yeah.
Work. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
We were talking about earlier the Tazzo d'Oro, which is one of the oldest coffee shops in the world, the kind of the home of espressos in Rome. And the story is that Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, had a coffee there and said, you know what we need in America is we need coffee shops. But Rome has to this day famously forbid Starbucks from opening a store in Rome.
There is one.
There's one in Milan.
No, there's one. So there's one in Milan. There's one in Rome.
What?
It's at Termini Station.
Oh, it's at the train station. Okay. I don't know if that counts.
You see, I'm still amazed at them. It's the first McDonald's Pathfinder salesman wasn't shot the minute he set foot in France. It was just like,
in
really?
In Portugal. The McDonald's have jamon ibérico in the sandwiches.
Really?
And a jam in the hamburger.
I had to fly through Spain a couple of weeks ago, and they have jamon ibérico in the vending machines in the airport. I'm thinking, that's a bit much.
Listen, when you do something that good, you really want to
really
spread
good.
It around.
Really
you
know?
So I want good. All three of you just to do a travel show. Totally,
in search
totally
of the perfect. In
yeah,
the
but
perfect.
It's not be fair. Padre gets Italy, I get Britain. It's like, here's fish and chips, here's bangers and mash. You know,
when they have jamon ibérico at the Vatican Market, it is ridiculously inexpensive. It's like, it's cheaper than McDonald's.
What's the CBO? I don't know what that is.
I mean, I remember going to Venice, and the price of good wine there was ridiculously low.
Yes.
If you bought your own bottle for Philip, you could, you know...
So the Vatican Market, there's no tax, and they get... So, for example, if you buy... there was a really nice bottle of wine that someone wanted me to get. Mm-hmm. It was going to be like 350 euros at the specialty market. I went to the Vatican Market. It was 12 euro. I have no idea how that works, but...
You don't pay any duty crossing the border or anything like that? Right, okay. Rome it is, then. How do they not have huge... I mean, particularly in Italy, how do they not have huge market stalls stacked with cigarettes that go...
They used to. So the market used to sell cigarettes. And oddly enough, a place with 1,000 people population was buying enough cigarettes for like 100,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And Pope Francis was the one who came in and he says, look, we all know what's happening here.
Yeah.
It has to stop.
Wow.
First, it's a vice. Secondly, we're essentially supporting money laundering.
Yeah.
Ooh. Wow.
So he killed it.
It is the kind of behavior that Jesus would have beaten people out of the temple
It is one of the things, though, that Lisa doesn't like about Rome is the widespread smoking.
Everyone smokes. Yeah.
They don't smoke inside, but they're all standing
outside
the door. Yeah,
that's gross.
Google accused of ripping off advertisers, says the Register, with video ads no one sees. So this is a special Google thing called TrueView. Yeah.
Basically, you farm these ads out to third-party sites. And they're listed as being viewed and viewable. But
they're hidden.
It appears so in some cases. And Google wasn't too keen to make much of a fuss about this. But now other people are.
Some folks who've bought those TrueView ads want their money back.
Yeah.
For that. Normally on a skippable ad, you don't have to pay. If somebody skips the ad, you don't have to pay. The problem is... Nobody can skip the ad if they can't see it.
Yeah.
So these ads are playing through fully in the background.
And the amount of fraud in the ad industry is already massive.
Terrible.
I mean, Facebook beat Google to that.
Yeah.
They were playing multiple ads at the same time that you couldn't see. But
and also
counting.
Counted a video as seen if you watched it for 3 seconds.
Google disputes this, and you have this in your article, saying they got it wrong, and 90% of the ads... on these sites are visible to people across the web. Google has strict enforced policies for third-party partners. And they support third-party verification from other companies like Moat and Double Verify. So,
to be fair to Google, a good percentage of this is probably
not their
extensions
fault.
That are running on web browsers to block pop-ups and block videos and autoplays.
Well... Get ready because YouTube
that's a segue.
Has decided that they want to start blocking ad blockers, and they are testing right now. A number of people posted this on Reddit. Ad blocker users, they're saying you can only watch 3 videos and then it's out.
Good. I know it's an unpopular opinion, but I think you've got to support the media.
I completely agree.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
People are hugely upset because Google is trying to block ad blockers, but they want Google for free.
100%.
You're basically stealing it, YouTube, right?
There was a sign also that Google getting smart about this because they didn't say, well, okay, you should therefore subscribe to Premium. They said you should subscribe to YouTube Premium so that some of the funds that you send in will actually go to the advert. Correct. That's a much, much sure. more compelling
it
argument.
It says, quote, you can go ad-free with YouTube Premium, and creators can still get paid from your subscription.
Yeah. Though they do not get paid that much.
No. Like, well, they get paid enough. Mr. Beast makes $40 million a year on YouTube.
Yeah, a lot of that's through side deals. I mean, I was looking at the... I have a friend of mine that was sharing with me the analytics that he gets. And you can have a video with a million views and get paid less than $2,000 for it. Yeah. So it's...
I pay for YouTube Premium.
I do too.
I turned off YouTube Music once and my family came screaming to me saying, what have you done? And it wasn't the music. It was the videos. YouTube, I think, is almost unwatchable without either an ad blocker or Premium.
I watch it without either. And
you don't mind the ads?
Really?
No. I mean, honestly, if it's a site where I'm trying to support the site, like this one I watch called Adventures of an Old Sea Dog about a pensioner who's sailing around the world.
So you know that ad money's going to the old sea dog.
I will cheerfully sit through and do something else while the advert is playing. You know, and
you're not actually watching the ad.
No, of course not.
Okay.
I completely disagree. I think YouTube, look, my money I spend every month on Hulu, maybe that's a good deal, maybe it's not.
But YouTube,
that is the highest value I get for any subscription.
I just
service.
Wish because I, if it's a content maker that I enjoy, I will sit through the ads.
Sure,
100%. I wish there was a way to set up YouTube so that it would front load them.
Right.
I would prefer that you give me 6 ads in a row.
And then let me watch
and
the
And then
video.
Let me watch a thing rather than taking a break every 3 minutes.
Yeah. No, that is really annoying. Yeah.
But that's why YouTube Premium is worth it. So much information is in YouTube nowadays. Like, it is truly the public commons.
Agree.
Like, everything from how, like, if I'm working on a Porsche restoration project and I'm trying to find some rare documentation, YouTube video. Right. If you're
Absolutely.
Studying for this show, YouTube video, political coverage, YouTube video, rare music, YouTube video.
You know, I use it of the pronunciation of companies that get cute with the spelling. Of
oh, yeah.
Name.
We do that all the time. I have to go watch YouTube. their video just to find
how
out.
How do you pronounce your name?
Yeah. So, but we're in a similar position where we offer a free product. If you watch if you're willing to put up with ads, and for $7 a month, you don't have to have the ads in our club.
That's fair enough.
Honestly, that's the only tenable way to survive.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I'm always amazed by people who say, well, I don't want ads and I don't want to pay. I just want it for free. That's
but I'm
why
a loyal
this,
fan. Yeah. I'm a loyal fan and I love you, Leo.
Well,
I
just, I'm not talking about Twitter, but just in general, that's why the internet doesn't work. That's why Reddit is doing what it's doing, is because people want free without
now,
ads.
The number of emails I will get from just like, I come to your site and I pay your wages. You should write this. And it was just like, really? You're paying
my wages, though.
I'm sorry
about that, by the way.
I knew the writing style was similar.
It was Frank. Frank was really the
Frank
one who was
very
saying
upset
that.
He does it all in caps. That's how you know, right? That's the giveaway.
Okay, but just to be devil's advocate on this, you know, so look. I am on record. I think Jack Dorsey took a left turn somewhere. He's not maybe at the best of his thinking right now. But, you know, a lot of the stuff he's working on with some of his alternate things, it is this, you know, Web 3.0 vision or whatever they're calling it, where it is microtransactions, Bitcoin, like thinking about paying as you go for content with these ultra microtransactions. Yeah. So I
Hasn't
don't believe
crypto been poisoned at this point?
Look,
though?
I'm not a crypto advocate. But I'm saying this is someone that's thinking He's about that problem.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any validity there in a model like that? Like, I know intuitively it's wrong.
Well, we got to do something, right?
I mean,
because we want Reddit, we want Twitter, we want YouTube. Apparently, people aren't satisfied with either watching ads or paying for it. So maybe there is some...
You know, the weird thing I've noticed, though, in the last year is that micropayments are working for a certain kind of... I don't want to use the, SHIT poster. someone who will go round and broadcast themselves insulting people and will get tips from people as they do it. That's working
Wait a minute,
really
that's
well.
A job?
What?
Yeah.
I missed my calling.
Well, you know, the big ones are the really racist and homophobic ones.
And people pay them to do that?
They will pay tips. On a show.
Oh, well.
What?
That, honestly, that's why so many weird, kind of like creepy, the racist, model, right-wing broadcasts exist. AM radio discovered this. The only way to make any money in AM radio, which is a failing medium, is to have extreme right-wing content on it, starting with Rush Limbaugh, and then it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And people are so devoted to that content, they will stick around. They will.
Well, I mean, there was a lovely quote from a biographer of Rupert Murdoch where he said, if you could do Fox News but for the left, would you do it? And he goes, if we could, but we can't.
There's cheapskates on the left. That's the problem.
So wait, hold on. No, you get paid for extremist posts, extremist tweets. You're telling me that I could get paid for the 9 out of 10 tweets that I don't send because I look at it and go, no, that's too much.
That's money you're leaving on the table.
The problem is the money you're getting is from extremists. Can I don't live with that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I'll take their money.
I'm a Jesuit. I could figure out some sort of justification.
Live from the Vatican, now we have swearing
there's
tourists.
There's spiritual laundering as well. You know, I can move it through a couple of intermediaries.
There's a long history of
that. So what about this as a revenue model? So as I've been really, really researching for my job, you know, Kick and Twitch and Rumble and all these platforms, one way they support their shows, this is really interesting to me. There's a major show.
Gambling.
Not gambling. This is actually ethical, I think.
Okay.
So super chats are a non-trivial part of a lot of these large streamers' revenue. So the way it works is you have a fan out there that's watching your show live, and they really, really, really want to have their say on it. So they will spend, you know, $100, $200, $500 to have you read a message from them in the middle of your show. And then it's pinned to the top of your live chat as you're going. I think this is an interesting model because it's audience participation. You know, they have skin in the game.
I kind of don't like, well, I mean, I guess that's what we're doing with Club Twit. Yeah. I kind of don't like something that I feel like everybody who consumes the content should support the content.
Sure.
And I'm not sure I like a system that says only the most extremist, you know, people who are so devoted, super fans, they have to pay for it. But I guess they're willing to.
Yeah.
Hmm. So that's the advantage
of it. It tends to be thoughtful comments, at least in my experience.
I would say that's what Club Twit is for super fans, right? If you're a super fan. That's an interesting,
I've got to say also that doesn't quite work as well with the Twitter verified tick, where it's just like, I'm going to pay for that. That's going to get promoted and the quality of content has gone down drastically.
Yeah.
But with something like Club Twit, people care. They want to pay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Sure.
I guess there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, because most, to be honest, I mean, only 1% of our audience pays. 99% get to benefit. Well, let's see, we still have those ads. So there's revenue in that. And speaking of which, let's take a break. I got to do an ad. I'm never going to get this in under an hour and a half. We only have 7 minutes left. Never going to happen. You guys are too good. You're silver-tongued devils. Ian Thompson is here from theregister.com. Brianna Wu from the rebellionpack.com. I just was on the Rise of the Rebellion ride at Disneyland.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's so, the best ride at Disney.
And I thought of the Rebellion Pack the whole time. I don't know why.
We co-sponsor them.
You should. And from the Vatican, where there are some excellent rides, I might add Father Robert Ballasaire.
Leo, are you driving an Audi right now?
No, why? Stop it! Unlocked, stop it!
Okay, just checking.
Already he's hacking the parking lot. Our show today brought to you by Decisions. In today's digital landscape, businesses are faced with an overwhelming number of tools and systems that are necessary to operate effectively. How hard is it to manage all these disparate tools, making sure they work together seamlessly? That can be a daunting task. That's where Decisions really can help you. Decisions serves as the ultimate orchestrator for IT and industry experts, providing a unified platform for businesses to manage their digital infrastructure. By automating routine tasks, customizing workflows, Decisions helps businesses reduce operational costs, improve customer service, and streamline their overall processes. In a constantly evolving digital landscape, where innovations happen on the fringe, adaptability is crucial to staying ahead of the game. Using a powerful no-code platform, Decisions allows both developers and business users to build applications and automations without a single line of code. With Decisions, your team can collaborate to build and adjust workflows, dynamic forms, decision-making processes to fit your unique and ever-changing business needs. Decision features a robust rules and workflow engine, as well as a pre-built integrations that connect to any legacy system via API. And all of this is controllable within a simple drag-and-drop visual interface designer. Here's a great example of how Decision's automation software can help. Knowledger manages portfolios and investment activity for family accounting offices and investment firms. They faced a challenge in managing their complex digital landscape. Decisions provided complete system integration, which allowed Knowledger to pull data from any database and communicate with every system and application in their process. This enabled a pain-free solution to managing their portfolios, streamlining operations, and improving their customer experience to keep ahead in the financial industry. Automating the small decisions frees up valuable time for your team to focus on the bigger decisions that matter to your business. With Decisions, you can customize workflows to automate routine tasks and reduce operational costs, all while better serving your customers. Managing a fragmented digital landscape is essential for businesses to remain competitive and successful. Decisions offers a powerful no-code solution that unifies business practices and makes managing your digital landscape easier than ever before. Discover the power of Decisions today by claiming your free demo at decisions.com/twit. In today's ever-changing digital landscape, managing the numerous tools and systems businesses need to operate can be a hurdle to growth and efficiency. Decisions no-code automation software simplifies the complexity of managing multiple systems, allowing businesses to unify their operations, reduce operational costs, and drive company growth. To learn more about Decisions no-code automation platform and claim your free demo, visit decisions.com/twit. That's decisions.com/twit. All right, you all got to go to get refreshments. I'm stuck here.
I got to meet your dog.
Lily, it's Burke's dog. Actually, I owe Burke a big debt of gratitude because we can do the story now. I got a call a few months ago from a guy I'd worked with on MSNBC's The Site. He was an NBC vice president. He executive produced The Site. He actually was a legend in broadcasting. He produced Don Imus's TV show. Don famously used to call him Moose Butt Borman.
Oh my God!
Affectionately. He was original staffer on Nightline. Became executive producer at ABC. Created World News Now, which the Giz Wiz is a regular on. Probably you would know his work best at CNN. Do you remember the holographic correspondent
yes.
on election night?
Yes.
He invented that. He was a very technical guy. He was very, very smart fellow. He did Newsnight with Aaron Brown. He worked for Vice President Gore. He actually ran Gore's Current TV. When he was at Current TV, he created the Young Turks.
Okay.
Which you might have heard of.
I work with Cenk.
Yeah.
Serial entrepreneur.
Yeah. He had been working as a consultant for many years. He lived up a little ways in Healdsburg. I knew him because I worked with him at The Site. He'd helped develop The Site. I've told many stories about him. He was a really great guy. He called me a couple of months ago and said, "We're moving out of this beautiful house in the wine country down to Palo Alto, and I am getting rid of memorabilia, and I have the original sign from The Site," which was a show we did on MSNBC from 1994 to 96.
Is that what that is?
And it was hanging up, but it had been broken. The lights didn't work anymore. It had kind of fallen apart. He said, "Do you want it?" And he said, "When you're done with it, I've promised it to the Computer History Museum. They want to put it there." So this was a show for this. When MSNBC launched, it was a joint venture of NBC and Microsoft. They came to Ziff Davis and said, "We need a technology show if we're going to be..." So I went out to 30 Rock and presented, along with a bunch of other Ziff Davis people, a show that we wanted to do. I wrote the long 95-page treatment, and it got The Site on the air. And I was there for the launching. That's where I got Miami for the virtual character. I played Dev Null with Soledad O'Brien was the anchor. So I said, "Yes, we'll come up." Jerry Wagley, who was our chief operations officer, had just got his Ford pickup, his new electric Ford pickup, the Lightning. And so we drove up. We got it, brought it down here. And I gave it to Burke, saying, I said, "Burke, can you get this thing working? It's not in great shape. He opened it up. It had had was custom made for the site. NBC probably spent $20,000 on this thing. Borman told me, he said, yeah, we did the pilot, and Andy Lax, the head of NBC News, called up and said, you need a sign. get a sign made for the show. So that was
looking
basically
behind you at the moment.
Carte blanche. Yeah, we have a big gear. We have a sign. See, carte blanche to do whatever he wants. So he built this sign. It was custom made fluorescent lighting all the way around, because fluorescent was all we had in those days. When we got it, the fluorescent bulbs were
very Miami Vice.
Yeah, Burke took it apart. He has been spending many hours fixing this, because, sad to say, David Borman passed away at the age of 69 last Sunday. It was very young. He was a really talented producer, a smart guy. I really enjoyed knowing him, and I'm very grateful. So, Burke, I said, Burke, I'd love to talk about David on Twitter this Sunday. Can you get the sign working? And John, you said he was up till midnight every night for the last three nights.
And now it shines.
And there's the site sign. We haven't hung it. He said, I get it working, but hanging it is going to, it's very heavy, and we want to make sure it's safe and doesn't fall on Ian's head. So
I'm very thankful about that. Thank you.
So it's not yet hung. We will hang it.
What's the frame is made out of aluminum?
Yeah. Go ahead and touch it. It's.
I think you'll find that's aluminium. But
oh! You just gave him an opening, didn't you? It's, I don't know if it's aluminum or aluminium or lead.
It's nice.
The thing weighs potassium. Like several hundred pounds.
So aluminium. This is what I'm trying to think about from an iconography perspective. What is it? Is this supposed to be like Jetsons?
It was the future, right? The pitch I had made to them, which was early for its time, this is 94, was that there would be a website called The Site, and the TV show, which would be a nightly TV show, would be on the air on MSNBC, but all through the day you'd be able to tune in via streaming to watch these people living together in this Victorian house.
What year was this again?
94.
That's Jennycam level of...
Yeah, it was very early days. I don't know if Big Brother had launched yet or not, but I thought...
No, Big Brother launched in 1998.
It was later. So this is Big Brother.
I actually thought about applying to that, and my girlfriend at the time said, I will leave you instantly if you go on that show.
You might have applied to this, because you would be living in this Victorian, and I said we could have cameras on everybody. People would tune in during the day to watch them creating the show and then turn in at night to watch the show. This is a big, long pitch. And, of course, they cut out all that stuff and just did the show.
You realize this is just the equivalent of a hype house? You invented the TikTok hype house back in the 90s.
But back in the day.
It's amazing how many people have copied it as well, because Sky News in the UK came up with the idea of putting live webcams in the news meeting office. And that lasted one session, I believe, because everyone had been warned so repeatedly not to swear, not to swear, not to swear, that somebody just came out and swore, and it was just, I'm sorry, it was on my mind.
I'm British, I can't help it.
That's what I loved about my set at the Brick House, because I had the producer's row behind me.
Right.
So during the show, you'd see them doing their regular thing.
That was kind of fun. Site was also an open studio in that respect. Soledad was the anchor. And you see, this is the logo. It was definitely... I was called out Christmas 1994 to pitch them, or maybe it was Christmas 95. Yeah, because it launched in July 96 to launch this. And of course, MSNBC changed format to be full news about 18 months in, so the show was canceled. But we have the sign. Burke has done an amazing job. He's put LEDs all around the rim, because those letters light up because of peripherally
okay. The light coming behind through. Them.
Look at that.
No, so it really is a remarkable thing. So, Burke, I just want to say your reward, free snacks for the rest of your life. And I've got the first installment right here, Burke. Come on and get it. There you go.
So don't take that peppermint patty, though. That's
you can't
mine.
Have that.
You know, we do not have anything like this in Rome.
They don't have a snack bowl for you?
You know what our snacks are? What?
Wafers?
Bread.
Yeah.
That's illegal.
But it's Italian bread.
I'm going to
It's like the sugar-filled junk you get here.
Anyway, David, thank you. That was a huge contribution to
that's
us.
That's very cool.
I'm really grateful that David remembers me so fondly. And I remember him. And David, we will miss you. A great television talent. His dad was a TV anchor in Los Angeles, quite famous. And so he got the bug from his dad. His dad was also a hippie. there's some great stories there. Someday we'll delve into them.
Do you think there's much of a, you know, there's a trend I've been noticing, especially as a lot of Twitch and TikTok and Kick and all that gets to be higher and higher production values, that they're doing a lot of, there are very few people that are building actual studios nowadays. Like, there's a lot of green screen and compositing and stuff like that. Do you think we're ever going to get back to a point where people are building these sophisticated sets?
That's a great question. When we built this, even then people were already doing that.
Right.
We had a TriCaster that could do virtual sets. And I'm a big believer, and partly because of people like David Borman, that there's something about a physical presence in a physical real space where you can tell there's something behind him. In fact, in our old studio, there were windows behind us. You'd see cars go by. I remember when we first built the brick house, a listener, a viewer said, I hate this. I just saw somebody walk by with a spoon going to lunch. And I said, yes, because we want to make this a real place. Yeah. That has a sense of place. And I think that that adds value to it. You know what? It would be a lot cheaper if we just did green screens and everybody was at home and we didn't have to have a sense of place. It would be a lot cheaper if we didn't do video at all, to be honest. And if I were starting Twitch today, maybe I'd consider those because, frankly, our financial, our business model is not great. It costs us a couple million dollars a year at least to run the studio and pay for the staff and all that, and we could do it a lot cheaper. I love what we've done, and I loved the site. Same thing. I loved having that physical presence.
It's special being here, like the lights and everything. It's definitely a different experience,
and it gives the panelists a sense of energy. And so I'm a big believer in this, but it's very expensive. It's a old school.
I've seen a lot of tricks, like one of your competitors in this space had a really interesting video the other day about basically a black magic box that's built for basically chroma keying around people with the camera
this year.
Moving.
It's amazing.
It was really interesting.
Well, it's kind of like what they do with The Mandalorian and Andor, which is in the volume. They have big screens and the perspective moves as the camera moves, and you can do look at The Mandalorian. Look at Andor. Beautiful. That's a fraction of the cost that it cost to make the original Star Wars movies. Yeah. Because of that. And I think it's everybody's good. In fact, it's better for the actors because the actors aren't acting against a green screen.
Yep.
They're at least in a space that looks like they're in mountains.
Yeah. But even with that, there's already a backlash. You've got the hardcore fans who are saying, I'm tired of that eggshell green screen thing that they use for Mandalorian and all the new Star Wars films. I'm like, well, okay, it's amazing, is it not?
Sure.
How quickly you get jaded.
Okay, but counterpoint, Picard season 3, when they went and actually built all those sets and the Enterprise D actually flew again, I swear, a tear just went down my face
I thought that was one of the big strengths of Firefly, is that they actually had the full set and everyone could get, in and get that slightly claustrophobic feeling, which works.
I was talking to David Hewitt, who was Dr. Rodney McKay in the Stargate franchise, and he was saying that when they canceled Stargate Universe, they were just going to toss everything.
What?
They junked everything. So he called the guy. He knew him from his Stargate Atlantis days. He said, I'll be there in like 3 hours. I'll just take what I can.
Yeah.
And by the time he had gotten there, they had thrown away like 90% of it.
No.
So he was able to get a couple of set pieces, some of the special lights and the sconces.
Yeah.
But he said, this is normal. And it's by purpose. It's not that it would cost a lot to store it. It's the producers don't want anyone making any more content with the stuff that they own.
Yeah.
No.
Sad.
It kind of reminds me of, I was watching The Imitation Game on the flight back from New York, and it was just kind of like, it's kind of like the end of Bletchley Park, where it's just like, right, we need to stop anyone knowing about this, therefore we're going to destroy it all.
Yeah.
Even the reputations of the people like Tommy Flowers and Alan Turing that made it. So
that's what made the Empire so evil.
That they wanted to shut down all the copies?
Oh, actually, no, it was the rebellion where they had to let those people go in to die, because if they told them, they knew the guy who was embedded in the Empire would be, never mind. That's what made the rebellion so evil.
You know?
There's a really good, this Jeremy Norman's History of Information.com.
Look at this.
A really good piece Yeah, we do have the Death
many,
Star plans.
Many Bothans died for that, that floppy disk.
I did love the Rogue One review. I think it was CinemaSins that did it. Just like, if you're really into file formats, they take the plans, they put them on a videotape, they put them on another thing, they broadcast them again, and then they put them out.
I saw that. I'm like, that's really good InfoSec. That's a good policy.
Sure. Honestly, sure. I still think Rogue One is one of the top three Star Wars films of all time. But, you know.
Look, the way that it worked where it had half of it on one, that's just good page tabling.
Hey, speaking of good old days, Ethernet, 50 years old this week.
Yeah, way to feel old, you know.
Wow. You know, okay, there's an entire generation of younger geeks who don't remember a time when it was almost impossible to properly connect two computers, even if they were equipped with network hardware.
Yeah. We're so spoiled in general.
Very spoiled.
Yeah.
Exceptionally spoiled.
Well, I mean, come on. You remember Independence Day when that, as it's the weekend, but the only thing that that Mac could connect to was the mothership. And you were like, I can't do that with a PC in that
model.
Right.
Well, the, one of the big conference that I used to do, Interop, for years and years, it was based on a foundation of engineers, not the companies of the engineers, but the engineers getting together at a cafe in Monterey, bringing their hardware and deciding how do we make our boxes talk to one another. Right. We just now assume that if you buy a switch from Cisco and a switch from Juniper, that they're going to talk to each other. No problem. But back then, you actually had to write custom software. And it was that movement where that kind of led to, let's just do Ethernet.
Ethernet 50 years ago at the Xerox PARC, the Palo Alto Research Center, Bob Metcalf authored a memo describing X-Wire, a 3 megabit. Woo-hoo. By the way, 3 megabits in 1973
was crazy.
Like, no one will ever need all that. 3 megabyte megabit common bus office bus office network system.
It's one of those great park inventions which we've all benefited from, and Xerox singularly failed to do anything
with.
What is the... We are now... I mean, if you have Cat 6, that's gigabit. Thousand megabits.
Cat 6 can actually do 10 gig.
10 gigabits. And is there anything fat? We have 10 gigabit connection here.
Anything above that, they typically do 100 gig. But there are copper like 20 gig. Right. 40 gig.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's so frustrating that, like, if you're shopping for a house, there's so few houses have actually invested in, like, really good
You can buy our house.
I'm good. I have one house in Boston.
We had a guy a couple of years, it was because of COVID, and everybody was working from home, and the kid was going to school from home. We had a guy crawl up in the attic and drop Ethernet.
We did it,
We have Ethernet at every desk.
Sure.
We have Ubiquiti, and we have very high-speed Wi-Fi gigabit. It's a nice setup, I have to
say. It's just weird how few people, like, it feels like Ethernet is less and less relevant, right? It's harder to get.
You can still buy a house with post and tube wiring, let me tell you.
100%.
So it takes a while. Yeah.
Well, you say that, but my mentor in the UK from PC Magazine, Guy Cuny, God rest his soul, was one of the few individuals who actually managed to blag a PBX setup and run it in his house.
Oh my God.
And he used it for running phones to the toilet, to the office.
Well, was it Asterisk or was it some...
It was just a box? It was one he... It was basically thing that...
Because a lot of people did that.
It's so funny because nobody does even Trix boxes anymore. That was the thing, right?
Wireless is good enough for most people.
Yeah.
You know, for the 20% of us that want wired, you know.
Am I the only one who looks funny at people who call themselves true geeks, but then they say, oh, yeah, I've got Wi-Fi, so that's all I need.
No, I'm totally judging them.
Yeah,
right. If you don't have a wired connection, I'm just assuming you're not serious.
We don't know you. We don't know you. You can't sit with us.
Wow, this is a hardcore group.
I'm with you. It's kind of like if you receive a press release from someone with a Hotmail address.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
My husband has a Hotmail address.
No.
I've been trying to talk. We got married for 15 years.
Oh,
I cannot get him to get rid of
this. That's hysterical.
I reopened my Juno address.
Now, you know what that is? It's now Twee Retro. It's like, Juno,
I wonder if I could get my old CompuServe handle back.
Pretty sure I could get my old...
I know you remember yours. I know you know your name.
I do. 75103,5156.
We should have just stopped at CompuServe. just
everybody. I'm not a number. I'm a man. UK is at it again. The UK regulator stopped the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard.
Yep.
And now Now they're thinking maybe we should halt this Adobe acquisition of Figma.
Yeah.
$20 billion acquisition of a web-based design company. I don't know on what grounds, but they're just saying, well, maybe we're going to have to, as they said this on Friday, we're going to have to make a deeper investigation because it could, quote, reduce innovation.
Well,
I got
any success in technology reduces innovation.
Okay, but look. Do you really think, like, I spend, what is it, $50, $70 a month on stupid cloud services for Adobe? Because I spent, you know, what was it, 15 years developing my Illustrator skills.
Right.
I need access to that program. I think there's another multiverse out there where Adobe acquire Macromedia.
That's a good point.
And they were forced to, like, not have this monopoly in the space. We're not all hemorrhaging money just to access the tools that we need to use.
The worst with Adobe was
this is just because everybody hates Adobe, though.
I love Adobe.
They make it so easy to hate.
I want to be clear. I love Adobe. I think they have revolutionized mass parts.
You don't like their business, though.
I think I'm talking a very specific competition argument here. That the fact that they bought Macromedia, what was that, 2000-something, 1998, somewhere around there. The fact that they bought that, they bought out the competition, and that left no one else in that space to really put forward a first-class quality model.
Yeah.
Don't text me after the show is over talking about, like, you know, Pixelmator. I love Pixelmator, but it's not Photoshop. Mm-hmm. And, you know...
For all its benefits, GIMP has some serious weaknesses.
100%. So, yeah. So you look at Figma here, and here's a tool that has really become a staple of graphic design.
And you could make the case that Adobe bought it because it was going to kill them.
Right, or limit competition.
And so they wanted to get Figma out of the game.
Right.
Because otherwise, who would pay for a Creative Cloud license?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's just the same as, you know, Facebook buying up Instagram or Cisco buying up absolutely everyone else
in the
networking space.
So maybe the UK regulator has something here.
Yeah. Honestly, if you actually had some decent market regulation in this country, things would be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Telecoms, you know, internet provision, a whole bunch of health services. It's...
I have to recuse myself from this discussion because the co-founder of Adobe was a Jesuit.
What? Which one?
Chuck Getschke.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. Was he a priest?
No, he didn't make it to, priesthood. He was a brother.
So
he didn't make it to priesthood. Yeah, he founded a multi-billion-dollar company, but
it's like a
he really let himself down on that one.
Yeah, I did not know that. It's an interesting story.
Did you see what the Basecamp guy was talking about this week as far as the Figma deal?
DHH?
Talking about, David was talking
Hennemeyer
about...
Hennemeyer Hansen.
How he was basically prohibiting anybody that works at Basecamp in their pipeline from using Figma. And I was really stunned by that. I'm like, if you have professionals... I think you should be able to use the tools that are best for your workflow. I found that really surprising. He thought he could get the best work from people.
I have been trying to break more of our organizations away from Creative Cloud because a lot of them actually can't even afford Creative Cloud.
Right. Yeah.
So like for video, finally DaVinci is decent. It's free and you can actually buy the more advanced version without having to pay a subscription.
Right.
For photo, it's still GIMP. It's the most accessible. But, you know, I look at how much money we pay for Creative Cloud, even in our small communication shop in Rome, and it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, this comes back to what you were saying, in that, you know, when Adobe shifted from being able to buy the software to having to rent it, it's led to some massive disparities. So that at one point, it was actually cheap, when they were still selling it in Australia, it was cheaper to fly from Los Angeles, to fly from Australia to Los Angeles, buy a copy of Adobe, and then fly back to Australia.
Wow.
And then they jacked that up further when they insisted on
cloud. How many licenses do we have? Benito, do you know? We probably have 8 full Creative Cloud licenses. Every editor has a full license.
And so two seats per license.
Yeah.
Six to eight.
Well, my favorite is the introductory pricing.
Money.
So it's $30 a month, but then you get to the year and it goes up to $59 a month.
Yeah.
So every year you have to, actually they've automated it. It used to be you had to call and threaten to quit and then they'd give you another year.
Right.
Now you threaten to quit on the website and then they forward you to another page saying, we'll give you another year at this. But if you don't do it,
Yeah. If you forget
you automatically get jacked up.
But the old model, I don't know if y'all remember this, but like I remember when Illustrator 8 came out, right? You would really go and look at the new feature set and you'd be like, okay, we have gradient meshes this year. Yeah. This looks like innovation. You would read the magazines like arguing whether it was a good enough upgrade. And you would make a decision every year about which Adobe products were worth your money. I'm going to do PageMaker this year, Go Live this year. You know, it was, I feel like that was an era where they really were forced to bring their A game every single time.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really the case with Creative Cloud today.
There are at least two people in our IRC who are using old versions of Photoshop, Photoshop 6 and Photoshop 7, but they're not going to be able to do that much longer.
I have about 30 copies of 5.5, which is the last version.
That was a good version.
It was a very good version, but the only thing that's missing is it doesn't handle some of the newer file formats, which is it's a
bummer. Photoshop file format.
Yeah. And the other problem is to use my legally purchased copies, I actually have to hack them because they've deactivated the activation service.
Oh my gosh. Leo, I mean, like, you're a serious photographer. You can't do, like, raw file format and stuff without Lightroom. Like, you really
Oh, you totally can. But you have to have something else.
Well, what other alternatives
Oh, there's tons
there?
Of them. What's the one I use? I can't even remember
what
the name
I have
of it.
On this.
Yeah.
Absolutely, there are ways to do it. And more, what's really interesting on the Apple side is there are iPad apps like Affinity. The Serif companies, Affinity Photo, and others that are kind of, I think, eating Adobe's lunch.
Huh.
So I think a lot of, at least on the Mac side, a lot of people are abandoning Photoshop and Lightroom.
Yeah.
I had the $10 photography subscription, which was Lightroom and Photoshop, and I just checked it the other day, and it doesn't include Photoshop anymore.
Oh my gosh!
And it's like, dudes, the hell with them. I'm sorry, I'm done with Adobe. There are solutions out there. I think it's Camera One that I use.
I'd love to look into that. I mean, I get Lightroom through my job, but
Camera One is not a subscription. You buy it, but it does all of the. No, that's not it. What is the name of it? Ant is gone, isn't he? Somebody was going to tell me what I use. Capture One, thank you.
It exists.
Not Camera One. Capture One, thank you. Chatroom knows more about me than I know because I've forgotten almost everything. Capture One is, let me see the pricing because I think it's fairly expensive. Yeah, they do have a subscription, $18 a month.
I would pay $300.
But you can get a $300 perpetual license.
Yeah, that sounds
and it,
great.
It handles all the raw file formats. So if you really want something that is kind of very similar to Lightroom.
Sure. To be fair, some of Lightroom's like AI tools are pretty good nowadays for like removing and stuff like that, for masking.
There's some really good stuff out there. But then Adobe now has
they added AI
Firefly
to their,
and they have outpainting and... but they're in a struggle. That's why they spent $20 billion to buy a website, basically to buy Figma. Be interesting to see what.
So
happens.
Much easier just to buy the competition than actually innovate.
That's
well, they've
exactly
got the money. They've
and
got
that's,
the money.
And that's exactly. I think what the regulators are.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, we've seen this where you know you get this oligopoly of companies just running specific. You know, I mean, Microsoft funded Apple for years just to avoid this kind of antitrust stuff.
Yep.
You know, you've got three big telcos in the US controlling mobile phones. You've got four or five ISPs, if you include Sonic, which I usually do. You know, I mean, there's a very limited competition landscape here. And for years, it's been like, yeah, let them merge. I mean, look at the JetBlue merger that was just going to go through.
Yeah.
No benefit whatsoever to consumers. So, yeah.
Doesn't it make y'all sad to a certain degree that, like, Apple used to really have their own tools in this space? Like, Final Cut was really, really,
you didn't get
really
taken seriously as a production person unless you were using Apple.
That's absolutely true. Like, Final Cut, Motion, I understand, was never as popular. But Apple was really invested in bringing their own, like, pro sound and video editing tools for a while. And those are just not as important to the industry anymore. Like, you've really got a near monopoly with Premiere, and I think that's really unfortunate.
Do you have an iPad?
Yeah.
I would look at, I mean, I think the iPad Pros especially are really becoming the choice for photo editing.
Really?
Because it's touch, it's kind of natural. The iPad Pro screens are spectacular, better than most computer monitors. This is a very good photo editor for the iPad. Photomator 3.05 just came out. It is does 600 raw file formats, and I think it's cheap. I can't remember how much, but the Pixelmator folks really do stuff inexpensively.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of stuff out
there. I'll definitely look at that.
Yeah. I find that the alternative, the Mac and the iPad alternatives, are really as good as Lightroom. The problem is you don't have the digital asset management, which is a big part of Lightroom.
That's really nice.
I just use Apple's Photos for that, and it actually works fine.
That should be a new Twitch show. Content creation with nothing but free software and services.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
Yeah, do tutorials on
OBS. We could do that on Floss Weekly. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of attention to the U.S. Supreme Court this week. One case, though, that affects tech people. The rest of it affects normal people.
there are people affected in tech.
Yes. Oh, believe me. Yes, absolutely. But I won't get into those. I will talk about a couple of kind of surprising cases that didn't get much coverage because of the big Supreme Court cases this week. But first, a word from our sponsor. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. We were talking on Ask the Tech Guys about why you would want to use a VPN. And even today, there are still some very good reasons for security, for privacy, to eliminate geographic restrictions. We all spend too much time on our phones these days, buying groceries, sending pictures to friends, maybe ordering a car to the airport, Father. The scary part is your phone carrier sees it all. They collect data on whatever it is you're doing. Verizon admits to it. They say it's so they can, quote, better understand your interests. Oh boy, they understand my interests. Really, all they want to do is sell your activity to advertisers. And they can. It's completely legal. Stuff like the sites you visited, what you've been on to online. The more they can get on you, the bigger their paycheck becomes. If you want to protect your privacy, your security online, you need a VPN. And I use ExpressVPN. It's easy to use. It's an app on iPhone, Android, Mac, Linux, Windows. It prevents your phone carrier from being able to see the sites you visit and sell it off to third parties. Same thing for your ISP. Comcast is not your friend. All it takes is one tap of a button and all of your network data is encrypted and rerouted through ExpressVPN secure servers. I am so impressed with how ExpressVPN does this. In order to truly protect you, it's important that a VPN provider not log your activity, right? We know that. And of course, it's in the privacy policy. They've had it audited independently by third parties. But I want to tell you, they go a step further. They use a custom Debian distribution on all their servers that wipes the drive every night. They start fresh every morning, so there's no trace of your visit. They run their server technology. They wrote it themselves, called Trusted Server, in RAM, and it's sandboxed. So even if it wanted to write to the hard drive, it couldn't. It starts up just for you when you press the button on your ExpressVPN app, and when you're done, it goes away forever. There is literally no way any trace of your use of ExpressVPN can show up on their servers. It protects all your network data, not just your web browsing. You stay private even when you're using your apps on your phone. Whether you're an iPhone, Android, tablet user, ExpressVPN even works on your routers. They even sell routers, very nice routers, as a matter of fact, at expressvpn.com/twit. And the best part is one subscription covers up to 5 devices at the same time. So your whole family can use ExpressVPN. It's the only VPN I use. When your phone carrier tracks you, that's a gross invasion of privacy. Emphasize gross. You can keep letting them cash in on you or visit expressvpn.com/twit to get the same VPN I use. Take back your online privacy today. If you use our special link, you'll get 3 months free with a 1-year plan. expressvpn.com/twit. expressvpn.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support and for making a really, really great product. So, yes, the Supreme Court said, you can discriminate against anybody anytime. You don't have to make a website for them. That was a funny case because nobody had actually ever asked that person to make a website.
It was theoretical.
I'm shocked to find out I'm in this thing. I'm married with a kid. And
the guy they said wanted to. Anyway, stupid case. The Supreme Court made the, I think, clearly wrong decision because it opens the door for discrimination of any kind. Yeah. And I think that, you know, protecting people against, you know, protected classes against that kind of thing is absolutely vital. They also threw away affirmative action after 50 years.
Yeah.
They overturned the debt relief Now, I don't know how you feel about all of that, but this one really got me mad. The Supreme Court rebuffed Apple.
Hang on, you got a kid about to go to college. So
No. My kids have gone through college. I'm done. Right.
Okay.
I got no more college. I am done.
I mean, post-grad, you could.
Oh, no, Abby just got her master's last week.
Okay. Yeah, she's done. Congratulations.
Although she is saying she wants to get a PhD.
No!
You know, I hear NYU has an excellent PhD program. And I went,
PhD stands for piled higher and deeper.
Yeah. No, if she wants to be Dr. Abby, that's okay with me.
Okay.
Worked out well for Frank.
Does he have a PhD?
He has a PhD in bacterial genetics.
Bacterial genetics. That's right. He worked on the mRNA virus.
He did. Not the virus.
Wait, whoa.
Antivirus. Antivirus.
We got a story now, right?
this case goes back quite a few years. Caltech.
I've talked to you about this before on the show.
Yeah, I think we probably have.
Back in 2016.
Caltech, which is a private research university in Pasadena, has patents on technologies that increase Wi-Fi speed and range on mobile devices. In 2016, they sued Apple and Broadcom, saying that both the companies were using their patents without license. Millions of iPhones, iPads, and other Apple devices using Broadcom Wi-Fi chips infringed the patents. Apple and Broadcom did something we actually were thinking about doing back when there was a podcast patent troll. We talked with our attorneys about doing something called an intra partes appeal, which is you go to the patent and trademark office and say, this patent's no good. Overturn it.
Yep.
But our attorney said there's a risk. If you do that and the patent office doesn't overturn it, you're screwed. Cause then the jury sees that and says, you see, it was a good patent. So we didn't do it. Thank goodness. Adam Carolla. Yeah. I think it was Adam Carolla raised a lot of money. He did it. No, it was EFF. Adam Carolla fight him in court, but the EFF went to the Patent and Trademark Organization and got the whole patent overturned. So that was a successful case. In this case, Apple and Broadcom went to the USPTO, and the patent office said, no, that's good. That's a good patent, which is kind of bad news for Broadcom. A jury then, hearing that, sided with Caltech. This was in 2020. And gave a $1.1 billion award split by Apple and Broadcom.
Apple's was the lion's share. I think it was almost like $800 million.
It's funny because that's only because Apple used Broadcom chips, right? It wasn't even Apple directly infringing. Mm-hmm. So I really think Broadcom deserves. But anyway, both companies appealed. The Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, which hears patent appeals, upheld the jury's findings. It did order a new trial on damages. That has not happened. So the $1.1 billion could be adjusted down.
Yeah.
In any event, Apple took it to the Supreme Court. In January, the Supreme Court asked the Biden administration whether the appeal should be heard. The Solicitor General in May said, no, please don't take the case. The Federal Circuit did it right. Supreme Court did not disagree, did not give them cert. So it's over in that regard. All we have left is a trial for how much the damages should be.
Leo, my husband works in patent law, biotech, and
Interesting. I did not know that. Okay.
It's often frustrating for me because I hear like people on my own side, the left, saying stuff that's just wildly inaccurate about biotech patents, right? Like you'll hear people say, oh, why didn't we funded all of this? Why don't we just have the patents and make them free for everyone? And you're like, I don't think you understand the history of Moderna or how these things come to pass. It's a lot more complicated. So I just wanted to preface this by saying the conversation around biotech patents, I think, is frequently stupid. That said, I have personally never heard an argument for software patents that I have found compelling. I think these almost universally limit competition. And when I read like the limits of what Frank does with his job, it's like a certain target protein. It's a certain like formula that they're using. It's a chemical process. It's so precise, and it's something that they've spent, you know, incredible amounts of money, like eliminating others to find the one that works.
Right.
So I think there's a valid economic argument for patenting that. I don't understand. I've never seen an argument for software patents, I think, raises to that level. Am I alone here?
No, you're not alone.
Do you all agree?
I mean, we're still getting letters from that bloke who claims he invented email, you know.
Sort of oh my
10
God.
Years after.
He's still going after
he's
you.
Still going
Is this
after
the guy
people?
That ran for office in Massachusetts?
Yeah.
He's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
oh, don't. You're going to get us sued.
He's nuttier than squirrel droppings.
It's that's,
I think you could
opinion.
Say he's nuttier than
Brianna,
squirrel droppings.
Brianna
yeah.
Woo's
that's
opinion.
A matter of opinion.
Yes.
Crazy. Okay, yeah. In the sense of nuttier than squirrel droppings.
He invented email.
Yes.
Decades after the first emails were sent. You know, he might have combined.
But he has the piece of paper, so therefore.
He has a piece of paper from. It drives me nuts.
He has a bus. He drives around Boston saying he's the inventor of email.
He actually sued Techter because Techter
he did.
Claimed that he did not invent email. And back in 2017, a judge dismissed that lawsuit against Techter. But that hasn't stopped Shiva Ayyadurai. From continuing to assert.
I'm not a fan.
Okay, so the from the tech side, the tricky thing about the Caltech patents is it's an interesting idea.
Sure.
But it would have no real-world application if Broadcom had not made their F-bar filters. So the F-bar filters are the actual device that takes the frequency filtering that the Caltech patents apply to and makes it something that you can actually use.
Right.
So, yes, they did build upon Caltech's work, but it's not as if Caltech actually made the filters.
Right. Mm. And this is my argument that, you know, for the biotech industry, those patents, they're going through, they're plugging like dozens of
Correct.
Protein
yeah.
sequences in, they're doing experiments, they're seeing if it works, they're running assays, right? What you're talking about, you know, Broadcom doing is developing a technology, right. spending that money doing the R&D, and a lockout process for a patent that, in my view, is essential across the industry. So I don't see the value for this. And I think it's really disappointing that SCOTUS
and
has
the Apple
this.
Part of the judgment is even more ridiculous because Apple didn't even develop the technology. They bought a chip from Broadcom.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how many times divorced? If I started a business using my iPhone, can Caltech claim that they should get a percentage of that business because it used their...
I mean,
the
American
patent?
Legal system is a weird thing, but wasn't that basically just doubling the bases? Apple has more money than...
Correct.
I nearly said more money than God, but look who I'm talking to. Apple has a lot of
company.
Money, but, you know... And so chucking them in there, maybe just in the hope that Apple would pay them enough money for this to go away.
Well, then where does it stop? Apple was not the only company to use the
F-bar
filters.
Absolutely. And in fact, if I was Caltech's lawyers, I'd be looking at this if they actually won it and going, well, hey, we've got a major payday going.
There's a long history.
Which doesn't help the industry at all.
Because universities own the research that its graduate students and its professors do in most cases. You know, Stanford benefits greatly from Google because Google was invented by Stanford graduate students and they pay Stanford every year millions and millions of dollars for the right to do what they
do. Something which Aaron Swartz was trying to stand up against.
Yes, that was...
If we wiped out all software patents today, do we really think, is there anything in the tech industry that would be lost?
No, it's a silly idea.
Yeah.
Now, how about DNA patents or biotech patents?
I mean,
okay. If we're talking just software patents,
that's kind of like software. It's our software.
I mean, I think the thing that would be lost if we got into software patents was all those lovely summer houses that lawyers have. But other than that, I can't think of anything practical.
Nantucket would go through a recession.
That would be very sad.
Cape Cod would be out of business.
Over. FTC wants to put a ban on fake reviews.
Good.
Yeah, damn, about time.
I would love this. I think it's great. I have no confidence that they'll be able to enforce this.
Yeah.
No. Under terms of a new rule, it's proposed by the FTC. They have to go through a comment period and so forth. Businesses would face fines for buying fake reviews, $50,000. Not for each review, but for each time a customer sees one.
Whoa,
that could add up fast.
Lawyers be combing through the Amazon reviews.
They would not just punish the companies that use the fake reviews, but also the brokers that sell them, that falsify the feedback. There's a lot. There are companies,
influencers that make them as well.
Well, but there are companies that buy and sell fake reviews as well as those that buy or sell fake followers or views on social media. And yeah, there's plenty of influencers.
No, I've had offers from my Reddit account.
All the time I get offers.
Yeah.
All the time. A ban on insider reviews and testimonials prohibiting a company from posting reviews from their employees and managers or relatives without proper disclosure. It also addresses review hijacking. Now, this is new to me. The practice involves repurposing reviews from other products. Well, this happens on Amazon. You'll put out a product and then get good reviews for it and then lump that in with others of your products that don't get such good reviews. So you have to sometimes really pay attention. You'll see a review on Amazon that doesn't apply to the product you're looking at. That's review hijacking. Well, we'll see. There is going to be a comment period. I think, you know, Google, Facebook, Amazon, Yelp all hate fake reviews, right?
We all hate fake reviews. But again, how are you going to stop it?
And the real issue is generative AI can create fake reviews at lightning speed.
Oh, I know. This is the problem. I mean, you thought Google was bad now. Wait until SEO featured AI written stuff is just spammed out across content farms. It's going to be a nightmare.
I will write you a fake review of This Week in Tech for only $5, Leo.
Thank you. But you're right. How do I get busted then? Well, fortunately, she said it on the air.
She said it on the air. But, I mean, look, if someone is going to say, hey, you know what? I would love for you to post a review because I know you've had a good experience.
Is that a fake review?
Is that a fake review?
No.
Right.
No.
No.
Or they say no family or friends, but, okay, how far out does that go? Is it an acquaintance?
I get emails all the time offering me, like, $50 for a good review for
Oh, God.
Or a free product.
I did a quick experiment. I've been away for about 10 days holiday and did a quick experiment and started monitoring my inbox with the out-of-office things. Over a 10-day period, I got, I think, about 17 emails offering to pay to stick stuff on the site. I also got only one PR who actually read my out-of-office email because I put a line in there saying, just to check if anyone's reading this, what is the SP velocity of an unladen swallow? And only one person actually replied with African or European. Five people replied with repeating pictures over the holiday thing.
I forgot there's one other Supreme Court decision, which actually is, I put this in because of you, Brianna. You've been cyber-stalked.
A little bit.
Actually, I have as well. Who hasn't?
Your wife has.
Anybody in public, in the public eye these days. The Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, ruled that if you're going to accuse somebody of cyberstalking, you have to consider whether they knew what they were saying was a threat, not what you felt.
Which is horrible because crazy people don't know.
That's why they're crazy.
The case was Counterman versus Colorado, a guy who was convicted. Colorado has an anti-stalking law. After he sent a barrage of threatening Facebook messages to a woman on Facebook that he'd never met.
Yeah.
The Colorado law just said, hey, if the recipient of the messages is or any reasonable person feels distress, that's against the law.
Yeah.
They convicted him. Counterman appealed, arguing his statements were protected by the First Amendment and did not constitute true threats. So true threats are outside the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, by the way, stalkers know this. If they said, I'm going to strangle you tomorrow, I can go after them. That's a true threat of bodily harm, right? You know this. Sure. I'm sure you've talked to the police department. And then they'll go after them. But if you say,
you should be strangled,
or here's your home address, it'd be a shame if somebody were to cause some harm.
Yeah.
Is that a true threat? So Counterman said that wasn't my intention to threaten the person. Supreme Court agreed.
Yeah.
This is the majority opinion. Justice Elena Kagan wrote, the state prosecuted Counterman in accordance with an objective standard and did not have to show any awareness on Counterman's part of his statements threatening character. That is a violation of the First Amendment. So if a nut job doesn't know that a chainsaw would dismember you, They're off the hook.
Yeah.
The problem is, how do you know? How can you prove the intent?
I've
got to
say, I do wonder what would happen if this case involved somebody, say, I don't know, doxing a Supreme Court member and members of their family.
Exactly. And actually, the only dissent came from Amy Comey Barrett and Clarence Thomas, both of whom I'm sure have had people at their front door. Mm. They agree that the impact on victims of harassment and stalking could be severe.
But you're putting the abuser in charge of the process, just like
exactly.
I genuinely believe that doing this.
This is the opposite of stand your ground. All the stand your ground laws are saying, if you feel a threat, you feel
that's
a threat.
That's a good point.
You can kill someone.
This is now saying, it doesn't matter about you. It's what do they intend to do?
So you should say, come to Florida and meet me.
Right.
Yeah. We'll have a conversation.
You're both in the right now. Great.
Yeah. I would say, and I think you'll agree, but I won't put words in your mouth. Certainly, most of the threats I see are spurious. Like the person's trying to scare you, but isn't really intending. We have had those. Somebody came to Lisa's front door. I mean, the person was obviously mentally ill, but that's who you're worried about, right?
Yeah.
So you've had it worse than anyone on the panel.
I think, this is a very nuanced, difficult thing, and let's not pretend it's not difficult to balance, you know, freedom of speech, which we all believe in, with, you know, the right to basically exist in America without these kinds of threats coming to your door. That said, you know, Marianne Franks is a good friend of mine. She's quoted in this piece. I really trust her judgment on that. Mm-hmm. She's worked in this space for a really long time. And something she talks about a lot is the people that do this have gotten very, very good at wrapping their comments up
exactly
in that little layer of irony.
Yeah.
So it makes you scared. It gets the message across, but it's just plausible enough for them to have deniability.
It's what the mafia has done for years. It would be a shame. If for some reason your front window were to get broken.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is, I'll just tell a very quick story. Back during the height of Gamergate, I gave a talk at a college, and this kid raises his hand and identifies himself as a Gamergater and makes an obnoxious comment to a room full of 300 people. Whatever, I handled him, I'm a pro, it doesn't bother me. This is why this is important. After this, it was like 11 o'clock at night, and I'm there with a female member of the faculty that invited me to speak at this college. And this kid, who is, you know, like, he's following us to our car.
Oh, my God.
Just going and being like, Gamergate this, Gamergate that, y'all don't understand, and being so aggressive. And this kid, I don't think he was a bad person. My point is, he had no understanding that following two women to their car at 11 o'clock at night was something that made us extremely uncomfortable.
It was just free speech.
It was him trying to get his opinion out there. So by that standard, you know, he didn't know that what he was doing was threatening. And I think that's a lot of these people that are a little bit unhinged. I think they're truly tuned out from what the consequences are of how their behavior affects others.
Difficult.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
It is a difficult issue.
And of course, in this case, probably there wasn't cause for prosecution. Right?
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Even though it is absolutely threatening and terrifying.
It was uncomfortable, but if you're looking at intent, that's just, it's not a perfect way to look at this situation.
Well, you can't, because there is no good way to look at intent.
Right. Mm.
You have no visibility into someone's frame of mind when they did what they did.
Yeah.
Right.
Unfortunately, I mean, as it turns out all too tragically in too many of these cases, the police only decide to act when somebody gets injured or killed. And it's how you balance that. I don't know, this is probably why I'm not a Supreme Court judge.
But that was the dissent. The dissent brought that up. This is problematic for restraining orders and domestic violence cases.
But they're getting far too smart about it.
If my intent is just to scare you, is that sufficient to prosecute? I don't know. It shouldn't be allowed.
It's kind of like if you deliberately set out to scare someone walking down the street. You think, right, I'm going to jump out, you know, with a mask and scare them, or I'm going to jump out with a carving knife and I may or may not stab them.
That's the problem.
You know,
and then it's too late. Once you find out what the real intent is, unfortunately, we found out and it's too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Final Supreme Court story. Supreme Court gave Google a victory. You may remember Rap Genius, the website, the lyric website. Genius did a clever thing with its lyrics. They buried an Easter egg in there, mm-hmm. right? And they found in the Google search results reproduced the Easter egg exactly. It was kind of funny, like you stole this lyric or something right. like
it's
that.
It's like yeah. what the Academy Awards does with their screeners. Just put, yeah. put something that identifies where it came from and who Ooh. Took it.
Yeah, basically they use different Unicode right. prefixes for different apostrophes. But it was a beautiful case in that regard, but it fell down on one simple fact. The lyric company didn't have the rights to the lyrics in the first place. Yeah, no. exactly. Well, yeah.
You cannot be upset if someone steals something that you stole.
Yeah.
Well, look at Apple and Steve Jobs, but no, when it came to the GUI, but yes. It's...
I think that's the theme of the new Indiana Jones movie, actually.
So here's the watermark. It was in the punctuation.
I love this one.
Of the lyrics from a song by Alessia Cara, Not Today. Google has been secretly watermarking lyrics on its website with patterns of apostrophes. Oh, okay, which can alternate between straight and curly single quote marks. The watermarked lyrics surfaced on Google's information patterns panels. So, which often appears the first result when you look up a song. Google even, or Genius even went so far as to make the punctuation marks spell the word red-handed in Morse code.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Let me see.
Okay, that's just kind of cute.
This is clever. Yeah.
I mean, it was a beautiful case.
This is the smart apostrophe versus the straight apostrophe, right? And by alternating straight and smart to spell Morse in the Morse code dots and dashes, Google did the same exact alternation of the straight and curly quotes. So yeah, Google copied it, like cut and pasted it.
Yeah,
and it spelled out red-handed. Well,
I mean, as I say, it was a righteous bust.
The other shoe dropped, and yes, turns out the actual copyright holders are the publishers and the authors of the music, and Rap Genius didn't pay them either.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Womp womp.
Yeah,
it's a little more subtle than this, but we don't have to worry about subtlety. This is not the place for subtlety. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, final thoughts, final stories. We'll try to wrap this up in under 3 hours because we got
the ship has sailed.
Well, see, the non-Twit premium.
That one's already.
They don't realize that this show actually started an hour before it started.
It did, actually, literally.
Yeah. Honestly, Padre, I thought the lap dancing class was a bit much.
But, you know, it was impromptu.
We put in a poll just for you. I mean.
Yeah, you know, I do smell like cocoa butter now. So.
And you still have, wait a minute, a little glitter on.
Cocoa butter and Brasso.
Look, I'm sorry, I could only get fives, not tens.
No, Euro coins, those are so uncomfortable.
Yes, reach the places other coins can't.
I'm just going to drink this water. Yeah,
it's like they prepared this. It's like too well oiled, this machine, so to speak.
Pun definitely intended.
Oh, no.
Our show today brought to you by Collide, KOLID, Collide. I love these guys. It's a device trust solution for companies with Okta that ensures that if a device is not trusted, it's not secure, it can't log into your cloud apps. If you work in security or IT and your company has Okta, this message is for you. Have you noticed that for the past few years, the majority of data breaches and hacks you read about have one thing in common? It's the employees. That's the weak spot. Sometimes an employee's device gets hacked, maybe unpatched software, a copy of, Plex that hasn't been patched in a few years. Sometimes an employee leaves sensitive data in an insecure place, like the downloads folder. And it seems like every day a hacker breaks in using credentials they fished from an employee. The problem here isn't, though, it's not your end users. It's the solutions you use to prevent those breaches. But it doesn't have to be this way. Imagine a world where only secure devices can access your cloud apps. Devices where the software has been patched. The credentials aren't sitting in an insecure place. In this world, phished credentials useless to hackers. And you can manage every operating system, including Linux, all from one dashboard. Best of all, you get your employees to fix their own device security issues, which means less work for your IT team. The good news is You don't have to imagine this world. You could just start using Collide. Visit K-O-L-I-D-E, collide.com/twit to book an on-demand demo today. See how it works for yourself. That's Collide, K-O-L-I-D-E.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of our show. What a fun week it was this week on Twit. We have prepared this small video for your enjoyment. Watch.
I just want to make it clear, every MacBreak Weekly is recorded on Taco Tuesday.
Be careful.
Every time.
When you use the phrase Taco Tuesday, somebody owns that. Taco Bell filed a petition with the USPTO to cancel the trademark owned by Taco John's for 34 years.
Good for them.
Because Taco Bell claims the commonly used phrase should be freely available to all who make, sell, eat, and celebrate tacos.
The Defense of Tacos Act, sponsored by Taco Bell and Doritos.
There's got to be a marketing plan here.
Previously on Twit. Club Twit exclusive.
I'm going to do my best and try not to fanboy today because we're joined by New York Times best-selling author, Mr. Hugh Howey. You may have heard of him here recently because there's been a TV show that's been just, you know, getting a little bit of buzz. Silo.
The funny thing is, you're talking about all these changes. I was in the room coming up with wild ideas, and Graham was always like roping me back in. He was like, let's stick to the books.
Hands on Tech.
Yes, we're back, baby, and we're going to start with the review of the new Pixel tablet from Google. Windows Weekly.
Yeah. I'll tell you, whatever comes out of this, if the FTC wins or the FTC loses, Microsoft buys Activision Blizzard or doesn't, I don't think anyone's going after Sony.
That's one of the conclusions I drew from the 4 days of testimony so far.
But Sony is the worst.
They're the worst. Twit. And why isn't anyone going after them for this behavior?
Yeah.
This would be a good time to plug Club Twit, by the way.
We should do it.
A special club for all you members.
I've been on that during the quote.
Pardon me?
I've been on that during the show.
You have?
Yeah.
I've been in there.
Yeah. That's the Discord they're talking about. That's one of the benefits. You get ad-free versions of all the shows. You get the Discord, which is wonderful. You get shows we don't put out in public. Including, we did some events on Thursday that were amazing. Stacey's book club. She did the new Annalee Newitz novel, The Terraformers. Have you read that yet?
Not yet.
I hear very good things. He also got, and I know you know this, Hugh Howey, the author of Wool.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a good
which
book.
The Silo
that's
series is based on. That Ant did that at 1 o'clock. Now, that's available on our Twit Plus feed. Plus Hands on Macintosh with Micah Sargent, Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott, The Untitled Linux Show, Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks. We launch shows in the club because the club members pay for the club. And they pay for those shows, the show production. And then, with any luck, the show builds an audience. And like This Week in Space, we can release it to the public.
Space!
It's actually been a huge success. So, what are you doing? You're supporting Twit. You're helping us do what we do best, which is create new shows. You're helping keeping shows on the air that aren't necessarily getting the advertiser dollars. I think it's a great way to show your support. And it's only $7 a month. There's an annual plan. There's a family plan. There's a corporate plan. And yeah, the Discord's a lot of fun.
Yes, it is.
I think Discord is like the future of social.
Oh, I love Discord. It's
smaller communities that people you actually know who actually understand that if they misbehave, they are gone.
Yeah.
Well, if you pay $7 to be in a social network, I think you're going to be 100%, nicer in there, 100%. Right? And anyway, Twit people are great people. Like, they're smart.
Look, just being real with you, when Twit people message me in Club Twit, I will get back to you.
Pay attention.
Every single time. Yeah. If you're not there and you're on Discord, maybe you got the bottom of the pile.
So anyway, I appreciate all our members. We love you. We thank you for that. And I especially thank you new members who are all now going to twit.tv/clubtwit. It's a little tough in the podcast world right now. Stitcher has just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a shock. We won a Stitcher award some years ago, I remember, for I can't remember what the category was, probably tech podcast. Sirius XM bought them, and they said, well, we don't want to run two apps, so bye-bye Stitcher.
Oh my goodness.
Buy up the competition, shut it down.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I guess that is kind of like
that. Is kind of like the Bill Gates Simpsons. Buy them out, boys.
Pokemon Go has just laid off 230 employees. Boy, if there was a game that should be a moneymaker. I look at how much money Lisa spends on Pokemon Go. It even exceeds my Simpsons Tapped Out.
Really?
Frank costs. Is still playing that stupid
since
game.
Since 2016. It's not that stupid. She asked, you know what's good? She just looked. It keeps track of your mileage because you have to go out and play the game. She has literally walked across the country twice. She has like 11,000 miles of walking since 2016. And that's not even the total because it only started recently recording it. So that's a good benefit.
I had to stop playing Pokemon Go because my phone a big is fan. So old that it keeps crashing it.
No. I had an article back, this is before I got into politics, where I think it was for Daily Dot, where I paid someone to chauffeur me around so I could play Pokemon Go in Boston and get the 1% experience of like catching.
My God.
He knew my specialist Safari guide drove me around to all the places hysterical. With the rarest Pokemon. It was a great
Now I can get 11,000 miles that way.
Leo, you should have been playing it in Rome because...
I did, actually.
People are telling me that the portals at St. Peter's, because there's like four of them.
Oh.
They do... There's a very high percentage of like legendary spawns.
They send you to heaven?
Something like that. I don't know. They added all the new Pokemon, so I don't even know how many there are now.
What is the battle like to take over the gym at the Vatican? That's actually really tough.
The problem is all 1,000 of us who live there are within range. So
you keep doing it.
Wow.
It's a conspiracy.
What is the...
So the obelisk.
The obelisk.
The two fountains.
Uh-huh.
And the front of St. Peter's. Those are
all.
And then also...
Who made the font at St. Peter's a Pokemon Go gym?
Well, for a while, the apartment that Pope Francis lived was a portal.
Oh, dear.
And then it was removed for security.
They had to discourage that.
I was
going to
say, they don't really want people going up to his front door.
Right.
Hey, Holy Father! I was just going after Pikachu.
I'm nice to see you. I think I'm still the only person on the panel who hasn't actually played it for more than 5 minutes.
Wouldn't it be great, like, the Pope is walking by behind you and you're in a battle trying to get your register.
Out of the way,
you know?
I'm trying to...
He's a little bit of a gamer.
Yeah. Well, the very first time he came over to the house, I didn't know he was coming over to the house. And so it was literally, I was just walking down. It was early morning and I was tired. I was getting my coffee and I walked past the group and...
All right. Okay.
Do you think you can get the Pope to play Call of Duty with you?
No, I don't think he does shooters.
He would destroy you in Call of Duty.
Do you think so?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know.
Dude, he would go on a killing spree like you wouldn't believe. Kill-tacular.
I'm pretty good. The Pope gets the nuke, and then it's just
You know what? I think he's more like a sniper.
He only uses his knife.
He sits back.
He only uses his knife.
Sneaks up behind you every time.
Man, that guy's stealth like ninja.
He's sneaky.
I would watch that stream.
Yeah, I've got to say, I would as well.
Wow.
Let's see how infallible this man really is.
I could kick my give him $100 million just to
when you get teabagged by the Pope, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
Oh, now don't. Oh my God, you're going straight to hell. Oh my God,
he's talking about the traditional victory dance.
Oh, exactly. Okay.
No other context.
Don't take this out of context.
Okay.
This is victory dance.
He likes the Earl Grey. Yes, he prefers Earl Grey. All right, over oolong or something like that. He likes a little.
I think the Pope would be more of a Animal Crossing type. Fan.
Yeah, I think that's more his.
That's more his speed.
He goes straight from the GTA online all day.
He's Forza. Actually, I could see him doing Forza,
Like, does he like to drive? He probably doesn't get to drive for
it. He has the Pope Mobile.
But he doesn't get to drive it. That would be pretty funny if he drove it.
I think you get to drive whatever you want.
I'm driving the Pope Mobile.
I'm not even Catholic. If the Pope's like, Brianna, give me your Cayman keys, I'd be like, yes, sir.
Oh, man. Is that your hot car right now, the Cayman?
It's not my favorite car, but it's my fastest car.
You like the Boxsters, I thought.
I've got a Boxster, a Cayman, and two 911s.
Sam. She's kind of a Porsche gal.
Didn't you have three 911s?
I'm only a two right now.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Sad times.
Ain't nobody needs three 911s.
Every time I see like a Porsche coming up for sale, I always you had a post about how that will be the most expensive 911 you've ever bought because of X, Y. I'm like, I can see that.
I've done a really good job at making my brand hashtag synonymous with Porsche.
That's good. Maybe someday they'll notice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Top Gear, but when they did get the budget Porsches and tried to do the road trip, that was really rough.
Did I tell you I met the original Stig on the, he was on the cruise?
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was kind of cool.
Okay.
Wait, is this the one who was no longer the Stig because he told people he was a Stig?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the first Stig. He was the white Stig.
Yeah, they fired him off the bridge of an aircraft carrier, if memory serves.
They did. He drove a car off an aircraft. Perry McCarthy. He was the black-suited Stig. Really nice guy. He drove a little bit in F1 and like the worst car in history in F1. So what? It's the steering broke. No, it was terrible.
You know what his personal car is? Porsche 997 Turbo. Porsche,
you know that, do you?
7.2 Turbo.
I wish you'd been on the cruise with us because you could have talked his language.
I totally geeked out. Like,
he was great. He gave three lectures. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. Anyway, you would think, if you got the rights to run the Apple Card program, that'd be a license to print money.
Yeah.
No. Goldman Sachs, who does run the Apple Card program, is trying to get out of it. They've lost billions of dollars.
World's smallest violin.
I know. Aww.
So sad.
Billions of dollars.
When will Goldman Sachs get a break?
Yeah. guys, come on. They lost about $3 billion on their consumer lending push over the last 3 years. A lot of it because of their relationship with Apple. They're trying to sell it off, or offload it, as they call it, to American Express, who knows how to do consumer credit cards. And that's the problem, is this is a new business for Goldman.
Right.
And they just, I guess, I don't know how you lose $3 billion taking 12% interest from people.
I was going to say, they do have a record for shafting people and being very successful at it. So
the bank is already...
Like, the benefits are good on the Apple Card, too. So.
No, I mean, it's pure interest rate. Yeah. Not bad, but
the card, maybe, the card, but maybe pretty, Apple Card owners don't run up big balances. I don't know.
I couldn't. I applied for one. Like, I make really good money, and I couldn't get it. They said I didn't qualify.
Wow. Yeah, it's very hard to get it. You have to have perfect credit.
I just don't. I've never had a credit card before.
That's why.
I think that's
why. You have no history, no track record.
I'd love to see the numbers. It could just be that the Apple people don't revolve.
I bet you that's what it is. That they don't carry balances.
Although, on the trip last week to New York, I did see an Apple bank in Brooklyn.
That's Apple, not related.
It's not?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's like the Big Apple. It's that kind of Apple.
This is where
trademark disputes begin.
Yeah, right? I was kind of like, it seems very weird. No, they have a physical.
It predates Apple Computer, Apple Music. It's been around forever. Apple Bank. I used Apple Pay all the time on my watch now, and in fact, all over Europe, everybody took Apple Pay.
Yep,
it was the easy way to pay. The bank has already stopped issuing personal loans. They have a home improvement lender they bought last year. They're trying to unload that as well. So there it goes. Goldman, which wanted to be a full-service bank, is saying, maybe we'll stick with that.
Eric Dutchman is saying that there's been actually a lot of defaults on the Apple Card. That's the other side.
That could cost you.
People buying too much Apple product.
Yeah.
I just have to have that Mac Pro.
But Goldman's been making a lot of moves. The Marcus has been doing quite well.
They still have Marcus, and they say they're not going to get rid of Marcus. But that's mostly a high interest savings.
But account. I mean, their interest right now is 5.1. Yeah. If you've been,
that's a good way to lose money.
I don't know. Jeez, I don't know how they do that.
Put me in charge of that. I will make you some money, Goldman.
Did you get face recognized when you came into the U.S.?
I did. I don't even have to take my passport out anymore.
Yeah, you have global entry.
I do.
Yeah. So the TSA is expanding its face recognition program to almost every airport in the U.S. now.
And they get really arsy if you ask to opt out.
You can opt out. It is opt out, but they don't like that. The idea is that they...
I did it a couple of months ago, and he was asked to stand right at the back of a very long queue.
Yeah. Okay, buddy.
It's like, okay. You want to play silly
buggers with us?
You
want us to, the pilot program currently at 25 airports. The agency has determined its face matching algorithms are 97% effective, quote, across demographics, including dark skin tones, but they would not
publicly release the results of their tests.
Amazingly enough. Right.
Oh, well, it works, really. No, you can't see the results.
Don't look behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's, of course, one of the big problems with face recognition is how poorly it does with people of color. Mm. The pilot program is technically voluntary. It uses what's known as a one-to-one face matching technology to verify that the traveler standing at the checkpoint matches the photo on their physical ID.
It's not voluntary if you want to make your connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that's not as bad, but they're also trying out something called, that was one-to-one. This is also one-to-N, which has a database of face images from a government records. And then that's kind of what you use with Global Entry. Correct. They've got the database.
Yeah, exactly. I had to be scanned at the beginning, and they compare it to that.
Yeah.
But that's just because, my information is in so many government databases already.
Yeah.
Just not from the hacking side, but from the priest side. Every state I've ever been in, because of all the laws, you have to file.
And that's interesting.
I'm a mandatory reporter. So that's
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I'm scanned in on the UK system for getting into and out of Heathrow. I've just done the pre thing, and the woman looked at me like an idiot because I didn't know what my social security number was. Yeah. But I'm not as good at rattling out numbers as
I'm scanned into the Disneyland system.
Do you get that? What do they call it? The fast pass or the lightning pass?
Yeah,
it's
we got
so
a lightning pass.
It's convoluted nowadays. It's ridiculous.
And it's so terrible. Expensive.
It's yeah.
It's stupid.
But so I'm showing I have the ticket on my phone, so it's got a barcode, so I show it to them.
Yep.
And then they go, smile. I said, what? They take a picture of you with their phone.
Yep. Yeah.
And they don't make a ID out of it or anything, so I'm presuming they're saving that forever.
A corollary. Does the panel think that the real ID requirement for airports is ever going to go into effect?
Because
they just
25?
Keep pushing it back.
Yeah. No, I have a real ID on my driver's license.
I have my passport.
Passport's a real ID.
But to come back to this, I'm one of these Democrats. I do think national security is a very big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we do have America as a country. We have enemies out there. And, there have been people that have smuggled, even in the Bush administration, they found somebody trying to smuggle radiological material into the United
terrifying.
States, and they managed to stop it. So I am not an extremist with trying to keep our airports safe. I think what makes this a concerning story for me is it's such a quick leap from here to police departments having all this information out there, particularly when they've got these contracts with companies like
AI.
Yeah, right, ClearView AI.
Out there doing that. Mm-hmm. Something I learned when I ran for Congress is there's a kind of asymmetrical information that the government has when they're pursuing cases, because they have the resources to go do discovery and to go into Google and to say, look, we have a geolocation fence of you here.
Yeah.
We have this over here that looks kind of like you. And they can just run that. Whereas if you're innocent, you're at such a disadvantage versus all these various programs that they have. So I think if they were able to sandbox this off and say to the public, we're going to use this for national security and it's not going to filter out, I would feel more comfortable with it, but they're not saying things like that.
And even if they do, there's a long history of this stuff getting exfiltrated, even from government databases. Yeah. So you can't have that much.
Remember the OPM hack? Yeah. They were taking, sort of fingerprints
that was the
and
government,
full details from government's own security screening processes.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
it's...
The problem is anytime this stuff is stored, it gets out.
Yeah.
Well, my biggest concern, and I'm going to piggyback on Brianna's point here, is the government is deliberately bypassing a lot of the Fifth Amendment protections that we were afforded because they're using a third party. Since the government doesn't own the database, since the government doesn't own the cameras, since the government isn't doing any of the screening or running the software, they're not violating your rights. They're just getting a name at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's, for me, that's the biggest concern because we've seen that happening. That's what Palantir was all about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Give me threat assessment in a way that is violating people's privacy, but because you bought the data and you're a third-party company, I don't have to run any civil rights concerns.
Well, I mean, on a sort of slightly more obscene schedule, this was entirely the reason for the Wagner Group in Russia, because they're pretty good outsource his fighters to other
countries. Know what I saw the other day, what I thought was very interesting? Prigozhin, who ran the Wagner Group,
Soon to be ex-Berserkin. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the man who will soon fall out of a window for no accountable reason.
Accidentally cut his head off while shaving.
He needs to stay away from umbrellas.
Yes.
isn't that how they got Trotsky with a poison umbrella?
No, Trotsky was the ice axe. It was the Bulgarian.
It was polonium poisoning, right?
Yes.
That was
polonium in your tea. That's how polonium they did Navalny. In any event, I don't know what's going to happen to Prigozhin, but he owned a media holding group, which is now being shut down. The media holding group ran the internet
research,
research agency, the Troll Factory.
It was really weird how on that day, suddenly the troll volume on Twitter just dropped to the floor. It was amazing.
I mean, bear in mind, the NSA has admitted that they deliberately trashed the IRA's computers a couple of years ago. But yeah, this guy's had his finger on the, you know.
It was called Patriot Media.
Yeah, because no one else calls it what it should be called. Yeah. But this was the weird thing about the attempted coup. It's like, you'd think he either must have assumed that everyone would come to his side.
I think he thought he would march triumphantly through the Russian countryside, amassing people.
A sort of Mussolini march on Rome.
There were a lot of videos of people out there supporting.
But not enough. That. He did the math and he knew, look, he's got about a week's worth of logistical support here.
Yeah.
And if he can't rally everyone, that's it. It's over.
Yeah, I think that's what happened so quickly. What was the Internet Research Agency? What did it do?
They did amplification of pro-Putin, pro-Russia, and pro-Trump memes. That was their big target.
And
big
also pro-Brexit as well. Yeah.
Brexit. Oh, yeah, they were in Brexit as well.
Really good at disinformation. Mm. They ran hundreds of thousands of accounts across multiple social media platforms. They could push anything at any time. There was the joke on Twitter of, oh, it's 3 a.m. in the morning. It's funny how suddenly everything is live for pro-Putin. Yeah. It's because people clocked into their 9-to-5.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. I had no idea that was run by Prigozhin. Maybe they're gone. Maybe not. That's the problem.
They're never fully gone. I mean, someone else is going to absorb the assets. Yeah. It's a business model now. It's not just a patriotic thing.
Yeah.
There are dictators all around the world that would love to do some influence peddling and disinformation campaigns on the cheap.
Yeah,
I mean, it's cheaper to run a troll a troll farm to undermine your enemy's resolve than it is to run an army. I do have to say, I was so disappointed by some people on my own side that are, with the Russian coup going on, and they're like, "Oh, Wagner," like talking about him like he's a good person or this is going to be beneficial for Russians. I'm like, I think y'all should read a little bit more about this subject.
Yeah, it was only going to get worse. It was never going to.
Exactly. Yeah. Though arguably better for Ukraine, but that's a whole different discussion.
So I guess RIP, the Internet Research Agency.
It will get another name. It'll be called.
It's too good an idea to give up for some kind of people.
Christopher 4.0.
Christopher 4.0.
Yeah.
Final word, the passing of a man whose name you may not know, John Goodenough, but you should know. He invented the lithium ion battery in all of our stuff. He was a Nobel Prize recipient as a result. John Goodenough, a professor at University of Texas at Austin, passed last week at the age of 100. He won the Nobel Prize for chemistry just a few years ago, the age of 97.
Oldest winner, yeah.
Yeah, for his battery work. If the lithium-ion battery had not existed, we would have had to invent it. Oh, we did. His discovery led the development of carbon-based materials to allow for the use of stable and manageable negative electrodes in lithium-ion batteries. That was back in 1979.
Oh, my goodness.
Took a while to develop it into a usable
application. It was originally lithium cobalt oxide is the cathode.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's so interesting that, like, for all of our advances in technology, like when it comes to battery tech, I mean, it's gotten marginally better, but
only not, marginally.
Yeah.
Really surprising.
Is there anything out there that you've seen that?
So the thing that's not pie in the sky that you can actually get now would be graphene-enabled lithium.
We were talking about that like a lot, like 6 years ago. And I know it's had industrial applications, but
we might be getting closer to it, not because people are willing to pay more, but because lithium is becoming increasingly difficult to get.
Right.
It's in more conflict areas now.
Right.
And graphene actually does offer some amazing
benefits. Like the charge time on a graphene-enabled lithium battery is, I mean, you can go from 0% to 100% in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Mm.
It's exceptionally good for large current applications, which means vehicles.
Right. Yeah.
You're probably going to see them in...
I was going to say, the cost of production is still fairly high.
It's still very high.
We've been talking about this, a supercapacitor, for a while. Right. This is related to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so a supercapacitor, it operates on a different principle. You're basically storing up charge between plates versus typical battery chemistry, which is you're storing charge in a chemical composition.
Right. A chemical reaction, which then is reversed to generate electricity.
Correct. Yeah. So, lithium got rid of some of the worst effects that we saw with earlier battery chemistries, where you were literally destroying the chemistry every single time you charged it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is why it's kind of stagnated, because it's stable. Right now, it suits most of our needs. It's relatively inexpensive. It's safe-ish to handle. This has actually been one of the biggest holdbacks on battery technology, because we're starting to realize if you were able to put all the charge that you wanted into a battery, it would be an exceptionally dangerous device.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Thermal runaway.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Dangerous phenomenon.
We demonstrated that on Twit.
You know,
intentionally or unintentionally?
Yes. No,
okay.
Batteries arguably very bad for the environment, aggregate. Political issues of mining these materials. You know, there's a good argument that the Afghanistan war was in some support, us getting, these resources.
Bolivia's a new conflict. They've got a huge 100%. Lithium the deposit.
I've got to say also, I mean, a friend of mine is a commercial cargo pilot, and it's his nightmare upon nightmare is being midway across the Atlantic and a lithium battery in the cargo hold bursts into flame.
Yikes.
Yeah. Because you're not getting out of that one.
Right.
It's a little toxic.
I'm happy driving my electric vehicle. Don't make me scared.
Wait, what are you driving now?
Mustang Mach-E.
I was hoping I'd get to see that today.
It's right out here. You can take a ride after. Wait. In about 5 minutes, we're going to dinner.
It's outside?
Yeah. Okay. Stop it. Go away. That's why he wanted to know. He's got that flipper.
God. Yeah, you started.
I'm thinking again.
This is on you.
That lease runs out
in February. This is like if you gave your kid a toy horn and you're going, this kid's making a lot of noise.
Why are you making so much noise, kid? That's Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, now Flipper Zero Enhanced. Watch out, Vatican.
Hi, DEFCON.
Padre SJ on the Twitter or on our Mastodon, twit.social.
And actually, I did announce I'm taking a little vacation from Twitter. I just do it every... It's a mental health thing.
It's horrible.
Yeah, just you know step what? Away.
Mastodon is ready, waiting, and willing to accept you. If you don't know, we run a really great Mastodon instance, twit.social.
Nice.
You have to be a Twit listener to get in. So many people apply saying, I just want to help promote my business.
Yeah.
And nope. But if you say, I just heard Leo talk about it on Twit, I will let you in. It's actually, despite all of people, saying, oh, Mastodon's over, it's dead.
No, it's great.
58,000 interactions this month.
It's really.
Which is up 23%. We have 3,000 active users.
Mm-hmm.
So it's small, but all of them are Twit fans. I did not get an influx. I thought I might after the Twitter meltdown yesterday, but
I think Blue Sky got most of that.
Probably, and Blue Sky, in fact, has had to shut down its invite system because so many people going in. So, but the Blue Sky's not; those are not serious people.
I'm just saying that for next month or so,
they're all about butts and Alf.
It's gonna,
I don't get it.
I don't judge.
They're doing
weekend.
Alf memes on Blue Sky.
Alf, no, big Alf memes.
Like the 80s Alf?
Yeah. Out of control Alf.
Is our Alf. God. Like metaphorically.
Okay, stay away from Blue Sky. Sweet. It's not good for you.
No, Blue Sky is great.
I've just received my invitation, but I heard they've been having some problems today.
We can party over on Blue Sky, yes.
Can you, if you have an invitation, can you use it? Or is it...
I think it's on hold right now.
I think all of it's on hold, yes. Yeah.
I had invite codes and now they're all gone.
Yeah, I have 3 invite codes, but I'm not going to... Don't show that. That was my invite codes.
You know what's sad? Google Circles actually would have done really well in this environment.
Can you imagine if Google Plus had still been around?
Yeah.
Yeah,
It required a lot of moderation because you had to block almost everybody. But once you got it down to your community, it was a fantastic place.
I know it's not hip or with it to say I like Mastodon. I like Mastodon.
I love
like
Mastodon.
Our community.
I love Mastodon because it's like I can take a post and, you know, I've only got like, what is it, 17,000 followers over there, and it is more engagement than I get with 150,000 followers.
Mm. And more thoughtful. I think the content is, the people who respond to you, the conversation is just fantastic.
I agree. It's great.
Yeah.
That's where I'll be putting all the Vatticats for the next month or so.
Really good.
Yeah.
We'll look forward to that. If you're not a member, twit.social. We also have forums. People still like the good old days of forums. Our Twit community is at twit.community. And I welcome you there, too. Those are both free to use. Twit.social and twit.community.
We nearly need to scroll past the Alex Jones thing. It's freaking me out.
On the Discord?
Yeah, put us He's wearing a
tinfoil hat.
Thank you. Or just spam it with more Alex Jones. Either way is fine.
Good. Ant put some stuff in there and it's all right. Ant's our community manager in the Discord.
He's such a great star bloke.
Isn't he wonderful? Thank you, Brianna Wu. I hope you have a great time at the conference with Frank.
I will. I was hoping to plug something.
Please.
Have a second. So if you go to Twitter, you can see I DM'd you an article. I'm working on something right now that's one of the things I'm most proud of in my entire career. So about a week ago in the New York Times, this story ran above the fold. The battle for contraception. I've been in the New York Times quite a few times, but this was front page above the fold, this project that I'm working on. This is a bipartisan push across this country in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision to basically guarantee the right to contraception at a state level. We are going state by state. Mm-hmm. We are pushing on legislators to basically codify these rights at a state level. What I really love about this is most of the stuff I work on in my career, Leo, it tends to be pretty partisan, right? This is completely
Everybody agrees access to contraception is important.
90% of people believe in this.
Except for
access.
Father Robert,
sorry,
ironically.
No offense.
I'm not saying anything.
We're still friends.
I cannot be snarky on this.
Seriously, the best way to cut abortions is 100%. Is early contraception.
100%.
I agree.
100%. Yeah. So I am really, really, really...
So we could say 75% of this panel is pro-contraception. 100%.
I mean, don't
I'm not going to put any words in your mouth. You can't say anything one way or the other.
Exactly.
But in all seriousness, something that I find really rewarding is working with other smart people. They're really plugged into the local legislature. This is not us trying to get someone elected. This is a very, very set of policies that we're doing in Nevada. And, Arizona is on the slate. And we're just going state by state. And it's going to continue through the 2024
election.
Is this
Rebellion PAC doing this?
This is, I'm working with Progress Victory.
Progress Victory.
And one of the really interesting projects I'm working on, Leo, you probably noticed today that I've been talking more about streaming and things like that.
Yeah.
So this group realizes, unlike the Democratic Party, that if you're serious about winning in 2024, you've got to get younger people
AOC
involved.
Realizes that, but she's the only
100%.
One. Yeah.
So we are working with streamers and influencers. There's a study that came out that 75% of people under 30 get all of their news from influencers. They don't read the Times. They get their news from influencers.
It is depressing,
but it is realistic. Yeah. So we are trying to develop a playbook to basically get that message out there and work with them to promote messages that they believe in, because this is their own healthcare.
I want to support you. Where do I go to help?
You can go to Americans for Contraception and support us there.
AmericansForContraception.com?
I think so. I've never plugged this on show before, but that's the group we are.
Well, let's see if Google... It's .org.
Yep, okay. .org.
Because it's a nonprofit. And you can donate right there. You know, I donate $100 a month to Planned Parenthood because I'm a big believer
100%.
In reproductive health and health rights. And I want to support that. But I think this sounds like a very good...
It's still rumored, but it's never been confirmed that Bill Gates sponsored the contraception amendment in Colorado. Do you know anything about that? I don't know.
But something I was going to say is we have an event coming up where we actually have a bunch of Christians that are going to be arguing in a debate format, actually talking about how they believe in contraception. exception. They think it's a right for the same reasons you support Planned Parenthood, Leo, that, you know, planned families are a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Give the kid what they need.
People should have families when they want to have families, not because biology has decreed.
100%.
AmericansForContraception.org. Good for you.
Really proud of this.
I love all the work you're doing. That's
great.
Thank you. And of course, RebellionPack.com.
Always support us.
And Brianna Wu on the Twitter. What's your Mastodon handle?
Oh gosh, I don't even know. It's Brianna at. I just.
Are you on Mastodon.social? Probably are, right?
I don't know.
I'll look it up. Look at this. I can find it.
I love my Mastodon. I really do. It's a great social network, and I regret.
Well, I want to get you more followers.
Involved on.
You're at mstdn.social.
Is that a good one? I really want to move over.
Doesn't really matter. You can.
I don't know how to.
So there's, if you go to your settings, there's a way to export your followers and following.
Okay.
You can't save your toots.
Oh.
So that's sad. Your toots live on that site, and you can't just take them except by manually kind of exporting them. There is an RSS feed for your toots, so you could
look at all my drone photos.
Nice. Nice.
And the cars. Yeah.
Wow. Look at that. That's beautiful. Wow.
That's Massachusetts.
Yeah. Brianna Wu at mstdn.social. There's no reason to move unless you, I'd love to have you on Twit Social.
I just
want to
hang out.
We can follow you on Twit Social, so it doesn't.
I want to be part of a Mastodon instance that believes in the same things I do.
Right.
And, you know, some of these battles that you've seen here, it just doesn't align with my paradigm of free speech.
I can't promise you that Twit.social is progressive or liberal.
No.
It's just Twit listeners
of
all stripes, of all
smart people.
Points of view.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
That's my puppy.
Oh, what a cutie.
That's a little kaiju.
Kaiju, stop chewing on the power cables. It's not okay.
Oh, good luck. Like any dog or cat is going to stop doing that.
I love plug sockets.
Oh, I'm already following you on Mastodon.
There you go.
Of course you are. Who wouldn't be? Mr. Ian Thompson, theregister.com. Ian Thompson is spelled weird, IAINTOMSON.
Yes, indeed. It's spelled in a British way.
In the proper way.
Oh, boy.
Proper way. Gov. I was watching a movie the other night. The guy says, none of your gov here. I'm sir to you.
Oh, good grief. Please tell me it wasn't Guy Ritchie.
It was called Deep End. It was a very weird 1970 movie featuring Jane Asher, of all people, working in a public bathhouse. In Britain, they didn't have bathtubs until recently, I think. So people would go to the public bathhouse.
Years, yeah, you know, usually had a servant to actually fill them for.
Oh,
you,
well, that's different. Yes.
Well, I don't know. I was watching Black Mirror all on the holiday week. So yeah.
Joan, what
else? Anything else you want to plug?
God.
The Reg is always around and always there. It's my second podcast of the week because we're now doing a regular weekly podcast.
Nice. Good for you.
Right.
Good for you.
Because as I discovered, the collective noun for a bunch of vultures is a kettle. So it would seem to work.
So the podcast is called A Kettle of Vultures.
Yes.
Vultures. Wow.
I don't know quite how that started, but
so
still.
So put the kettle on is boil a bunch of vultures?
We like to keep things fairly bubbly. Right. But
the real question is, can you keep them under an hour and a half?
Oh, yeah. No, we limit it to, I think it's about 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do
we
that.
Only discuss, we only discuss one story, and we eliminate the swearing, mostly.
That probably saves quite a bit of time.
That's a negative in my view.
Yeah, no, I mean, some stuff slips. I mean, we discussed the, I was talking about this Teams profanity ban with a mate the other day, and just like, I wonder how geographical it is. Is wanker or cockwomble going to be allowed in there? And it's just like, I've got a feeling, you know, there's going to be some intensive research going on, and just what you can slip past the Teams team.
Look for Kettle of Vultures at a podcast player near you.
Indeed.
Folks, that's it for this twit. Boy, I didn't want to end it so soon, but after 3 hours...
It's time.
We gotta do it.
Goodness, it really has been 3 hours. Yeah, okay.
I like that.
I don't know how. I keep trying. I try.
No, you're not.
Try.
You're not trying.
I try.
I'm enjoying it way too much, mate. Seriously.
You're not.
You know, my philosophy is if you want a 90-minute podcast, just stop it at 90 minutes. And that's it. You're done.
You can do 90-minute podcasts.
Or in this case, yeah, you get two 90-minute podcasts, but then you'll have next week. It's like a pile of New Yorkers or National Geographic's just pile.
I know. We've had to do cleanouts on those. Oh, you heard about National Geographic's firing all its staff.
I did.
I know. Yeah.
Because they're owned by?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, is it Disney?
It's Discovery.
Oh, well, Discovery.
Oh, for goodness sake.
So naturally, they had to fire everybody. So sad.
Oh, actually, and Discovery is now owned by Disney.
Yeah.
They're scraping for money.
Oh, I know.
They're poor.
But it's
so no more staff writers, but the magazine goes on?
I'm presuming using pretty pictures and freelancers willing to work cheap. But wow. The articles kind of made that magazine. It was like,
yeah.
And they said it was like Playboy. But
and if you ever needed more incentive to join Club Twit, they laid off 17 editorial positions, including all the staff writers, the entire podcast staff.
Oh, good.
And a group of editors who'd been on staff, some of them for 40 years.
Didn't Nat Geo or Discovery buy Revision 3?
Discovery did.
That was Discovery.
Yes.
All right. We got to be at dinner in 9 minutes.
Let's go, kids.
Okay.
If you want to watch the show live, you can every Sunday, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2 to 5 Pacific time. That's 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern time, 2100 UTC. Let me get my math straight. At live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live in our IRC, open to all, irc.twit.tv. Club Twit members, of course, have access to the special Club Twit Discord. You can also get the shows after the fact on demand at our website, twit.tv. You can also, get it on YouTube. There's a YouTube dedicated channel. I think the best thing to do is subscribe in your favorite podcast player, and that way you'll get it automatically just in time for your Monday morning commute. Thank you. It's so great to have everybody live in studio. So great to see you all. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Amazing.